Good evening. If I could ask my colleagues to take their seats, please. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm a counselor at large from Ward 7. I chair the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. I'm going to take a moment to introduce my colleagues from the City Council. We have several staff members here. I'm going to provide everyone with a brief overview of what our protocol is going to be this evening. We're going to get right to work. My intent is to finish no later than 10 p.m. tonight. I hope we'll be able to accomplish that. So let me start. To my immediate left is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 5. Behind her is Councilor Susan Albright, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 2, but not a member of the committee. To my right, immediate right, is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. Behind him is Scott Lennon, President of the City Council and Councilor-at-Large from Ward 1, also a member of the committee. To my right, Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 8 and a member of the committee. And behind Councilor Lipoff is Councilor Emily Norton, Ward Councilor from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. We have from our legal department Robert Waddick and Rita Young. We have Neil Cronin from the Planning Department, our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We have Barney Keith, who's our new Director of Planning. And we have one gentleman from the Planning and Development Committee, and Peter Doringer. Our quorum for that group is arriving shortly, but Mr. Doringer and Mr. Keith are both members of the Planning and Development Commission. So we have two matters on for this evening. The first is 219-16. It's a special permit to increase the floor area ratio at 21 Orient Ave. It's Louisa Silva. This is Ward 6. I know at the outset that Councilor Greg Schwartz, Vice Chair of the Committee, is running late this evening, but he has indicated to me previously that he's reviewed this, and I'll share his commentary later on. The way we're going to proceed this evening is we're going to take up the Orient Avenue matter first. Depending on how the questioning goes, it is my intent to try to vote on that this evening, if that's the will of the committee. And then we're going to turn to what I suspect everyone else is here for this evening, which is the OR project. We are going this evening to focus our attention on the OR project to the transportation aspects of that project. And also the parking aspects. And we're going to start by having a presentation from the city's peer reviewer. A peer reviewer is someone who is hired by the city but paid for by the developer to essentially review the work that is done by the city, by the petitioner's experts. Then we're going to have some commentary. I think, Mr. Cronin, you're going to present for the planning department. There'll also be some presentation from the city, from the petitioner's traffic expert. I'm going to entertain comments and questions from my colleagues. I'm going to ask folks to stay focused on with their questions on the transportation and parking aspects. That's what we're focusing on this evening. I'm going to open it up to commentary from the members of the public. Very simple rules when you come up and comment. Come up to the podium, state your name and address. And unless you've spoken to me in advance, 3 minutes or less for your presentation, I have given permission to one organized group this evening to present in an organized fashion with a number of people presenting. This is frankly an experiment for this committee. We're trying it out. If there are other organized groups who wish to combine what would otherwise be a presentation by or comments by a number of people in the one cogent presentation, I'll certainly consider that for future meetings. They need to talk to me about it in advance so we can go through the ground rules on that. And I will expect that anybody presenting as part of a group is not then going to get up and present additionally. I mean, I think the idea here is we're actually trying to provide a venue for effective public comment. But want to be respectful of the ability of each and every member of the public to to be heard on this petition if he or she wants to be. I'll add that written commentary is always welcome at any time, and we're not closing the public hearing this evening. There'll be plenty of opportunity for members of the public to speak in the future. We've been joined by Jonathan Yeo, my former colleague on the school committee. Welcome. So with that, are the petitioners here for 21 Orion Avenue? Come on up, please, sir. Thank you. If you would, Mr. President.
Hi, Ryan Sylvia, owner, 21 Orion Avenue. Thank you for considering this.
I'm going to give us just a very quick overview of what you're looking for here.
So that's the main house right there. Currently, there's no garage or on the property, and you know, we've spoken to an architect to kind of understand where the best use of the property would be to add a garage. And you know, we've got some plans here. We had preliminary discussions with people in the town, tried to prepare as best we could, and you know, look to add that piece there to the right, which would connect directly to the house and have a driveway access up to the garage. You know, we're confident that we're going to do it with the integrity that the neighborhood deserves, and that it's an effective use of additional space on the property.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let me just ask, is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this particular petition? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to, I'll ask again in a moment, but I'll then entertain a motion to close the public hearing. You're welcome to grab a seat if you'd like, or you stand up there, either one. Does planning want to present on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The petition before you is to increase the nonconforming structure and to further increase the nonconforming FAR. Criteria to consider when reviewing this request: if the site is an appropriate location for the expanded residence, the proposed increase in the nonconforming structure will not be more significantly more detrimental than the existing nonconforming structure is to the neighborhood. The proposed increase in the nonconforming FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. This is a quick aerial, as you can see in the highlighted section where the property is, in a densely settled residential area. This is the proposed site plan. The existing garage is to the right on Oakwood Terrace, or sorry, the existing driveway. That driveway would be filled in and created, and the new garage, or the new driveway, would be constructed off of Orient Avenue leading up to the proposed garage. This is the elevation shown earlier. You can see the garage to the right of the existing dwelling. And this is the proposed right side elevation of the garage. This would be from the corner of Oakwood Terrace and Orient Avenue.
Good. Thank you. Do members of the committee or any council members have any questions or comments on this petition? Lack of questions is usually considered good for applicants. And I want to just make it quite clear that lack of questions doesn't mean we haven't done our homework and read the materials, but sometimes petitions are relatively straightforward, and so lack of questioning is, as I said, good. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Seeing none, I know that Councilor Schwartz is not here, so will someone else? Councilor Clark, are you moved to close the public hearing? All right. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in favor, none opposed. We have 3 absent at the moment. Do I have a motion to approve? All right. We have a motion to approve by Councilor Crosley. Do you have a draft order for us, Mr. Cronin?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Before we go through the findings, I do want to convey that that our colleague, Councilor Schwartz, asked me to indicate that he was in support of this petition, that he found it to be appropriate, and would urge us to vote in favor of it. So let's go through the findings. 1 and 2, are there any questions in regard to them?
Okay.
Any more findings there?
Just one more, Mr. Chairman.
Everyone good with this third finding? Okay. Any conditions that we need to worry about other than standard ones?
No, Mr. Chairman, just standard conditions.
All right, great. All right, I have a motion by Councillor Crosley for approval. All in favor of approval for committee members? 1, 2, 3. 5 in favor, none opposed. It passes. So this can be taken up at the August 8th meeting of the City Council. There's absolutely no need for you to attend. Presumably it'll be voted on at that time. Presumably it'll be voted on favorably. If you have any questions at all about process thereafter, speak with Ms. Kahn, our committee clerk, or Mr. Cornyn from the Planning Department.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Best of luck with your project.
Thank you.
All right, next, I'm going to read into the record. We have two items, both related to the Orr Building. 180-16 special permit to rezone the Orr Block to Mixed Use 4. This is, as you all know, on Walnut and Washington Street, and then 179-16 special permit petition for the Orr Building at Walnut and Washington Street, both by Mark Newtonville, LLC. There's a lot of relief requested here, as we'll note. I'm not going to read it again into the record. This, of course, is in Ward 2. So do we have the traffic consultant ready to present on this one? Please come on up, please. Peter, Barney, do you want to just introduce, is there anybody else? We have a quorum now for planning and development? Okay. So are you ready to proceed as well with your hearing?
Yes, we are. We'll open our hearing as well for the planning and development
board. Okay, so we're going to open the planning and development hearing. We previously opened a public hearing on this for the Land Use Committee. Good evening. We've also been joined by Councillor Jim Cote, a member of the committee, Councillor at Large from Ward 3. Good evening.
My name is Michael Santos. I'm with Howard Stein Hudson. We are a transportation planning and traffic engineering consulting company based in Boston, Massachusetts. We had the opportunity to review the traffic impact and access study prepared for the project, prepared by VHC, and we also had a chance to review the site plans for the project. Can we get the presentation up on the screen?
Oh, that's not his.
While we're getting that up, I'll just go over the process to date. So we had an opportunity to review the traffic impact and access study prepared by VHD. We submitted some comments to the city. We met with the city staff on June 27th, a couple weeks ago, to discuss our findings from the review. In that meeting, we developed some additional mitigation that we would suggest to the petitioner. We then discussed these recommendations with the petitioner's transportation consultant on June 30th. So this presentation is going to cover our review, and then also the follow-up meeting and the follow-up discussions with VHD. Yeah. I don't think this is working here. There we go. It just switched. Okay. Okay. So the peer review consisted of three components. The first part is to review the site plan. That includes a review of the parking, the loading and service areas, which also includes how the trash areas are accessed, and the site access points, which is how the site is accessed from the public roadways. The second part of the review consisted of a review of the traffic study prepared by VHD. And we reviewed all of the components of the traffic study, including the study area, the study methodology that they used to ensure that it's up to industry standards, the data collection methods. We reviewed the safety analysis that they provided. We reviewed access to public transportation. And then we looked at how they developed their future conditions, which includes future traffic conditions both without the project and with the project. And then finally, we reviewed the traffic operations analysis, which is an analysis of the intersections and how well they operate. We look at delays, how much vehicles will be delayed, how much queues are building at the intersections. And then finally, and most importantly, we reviewed the mitigation that was proposed in the traffic study. And then we offered our suggestions and developed some additional mitigation measures. So we just went over this. So the first part was a site review. We looked at the parking layout to make sure that the parking works, that the circulation works, that there's enough parking on the site. So the petitioner is proposing 110 commercial spaces on the surface lot and 236 residential spaces in an underground garage. This is about 2.5 spaces per 1,000 square feet and about 1.4 spaces per residential unit. They're also planning to provide 180 bicycle spaces for the residents on the site. We feel that this is an adequate parking supply based on other developments that we've reviewed and that we've seen in other developments being proposed. The next part is to look at the loading and service to make sure that we don't have delivery trucks double parking or blocking the roadways. All of the loading and service can occur on the site. The petitioner is going to be able to accommodate a trailer truck on the site. They're also proposing 2 short-term on-street zones for delivery, such as FedEx or food deliveries for the residents. The third part is to look at the site access. They're currently proposing a driveway off of Walnut Street. They're consolidating, I believe, 6 existing curb cuts. And the second point of access is going to be shared with the post office and is going to be off of Washington Terrace. We looked at the site distance lines to make sure that there's no safety issues at each location. We find that both locations are, they should operate safely. We did suggest one additional measure for the Walnut Street site access, and that's to install a do not block box pavement markings so vehicles can turn left into the site in the event that there are queues backed up from the Washington Street signal. So the next step is to review the traffic study. We reviewed the study area to make sure that it's adequate and that it covers all of the intersections that will be most impacted by the impacts of the project. The study area contains 2 signalized intersections and 8 unsignalized intersections. The 2 signalized locations are Washington Street at Walnut Street and Washington Street at Lowell Ave. We also reviewed the study methodology to make sure that it's consistent with state requirements and city requirements. And we find that, generally, everything that they did was consistent with what the state and city would require. That includes the future conditions are 7 years out from 2016, so the future year conditions are built out to 2023. We reviewed the data collection methods to make sure that they accurately counted vehicles and that the time periods were the correct time periods. So they did data collection in November of 2015 during the weekday morning and evening peak periods, so 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. 4 to 6 p.m. Also, the count, I just want to point out, this was before Thanksgiving, so it's before the holidays when school's in session. They also applied adjustments to make sure that the traffic volumes were adjusted up to average traffic conditions. That includes 1 year of traffic growth from 2015 to 2016 and the appropriate seasonal adjustments needed to get the November volumes to the average traffic month volumes. The safety analysis indicates that there, all of the study area intersections are experienced crash rates below the city averages or the regional averages. There are no significant safety issues at any of the intersections that result in a high number of dangerous crashes. I just want to point out, you know, the intersection of Washington Street at Walnut Street, it currently has a confusing configuration where vehicles turn left against two through lanes. So I was actually a little surprised that there weren't more crashes there. Then we reviewed the public transportation. The site is very close to the Newtonville Commuter Rail T station and two MBTA express bus routes, so we believe that, you know, people that live there will have the opportunity to commute into Boston if that's where they work, you know, through the express buses or the commuter rail. So that's an added bonus that will help alleviate the traffic impacts of the project. So the next step is to develop the future conditions. We reviewed the methodology for developing the future conditions traffic volumes. The first part of this is to develop our future condition traffic volume 7 years into the future without the project. So this is called the no-build conditions. They use a general background traffic growth rate. I believe it was either 0.5 or 1% per year, which is pretty standard in what you would expect to see around a built-up city like Newton. They also incorporated any projected traffic volumes from other proposed developments, such as the Austin Street development, and I believe they included three other nearby developments. So they took those traffic volumes and added those in as well. And the next step is to incorporate any future roadway improvements that might be occurring in the area. There were no roadway improvements that were identified that would be built out within that seven-year time horizon. I do realize that there is the Washington Street Corridor Planning Study, which will be built out eventually, but it was not included in this, and we agree with that. We don't know if that's going to be built out within a seven-year time horizon. And then the final step is to review the build conditions. Those conditions assess the impact of the project. What the proponent did was estimate the trips expected to be generated by the project. These estimates were developed using standard industry traffic data, trip generation data published by the Institute of Transportation Engineers for both apartments and for shopping retail uses. This is a standard way to estimate trips for developments. The next step would be to account for mode share splits. So this would account for any reductions in transit usage or walking or bicycle usage. They also included any pass-by trips that may be occurring. So pass-by trips are vehicles that are already on either Washington Street or Walnut Street that would go to the site and then go to their final destination. And they also accounted for internal trips, which would be trips between the residential piece of the project and the retail piece of the project. So generally speaking, this is what we would expect traffic engineers to do within the standard traffic engineering practice. I did have a couple of questions for the petitioner about their trip generation estimates regarding the existing trips to the site. They accounted for the existing trips to the site as well, and also about their usage of the transit share split. So we discussed that, and they provided me with an updated trip generation estimate, and it really didn't change too much from what was presented in the traffic study. So we're comfortable with all of that. And finally, the petitioner looked at the intersection operations. They kind of focused on the traffic signals of Washington Street at Walnut Street and Washington Street at Lowell Street. They use standard traffic engineering software called Synchro. So this incorporates all of the traffic volumes, all of the growth that we built, all of the project generated trips, all of the background project trips. And what it does is it estimates the amount of delay that vehicles currently experience and will experience in the future. It estimates the queues at the intersections, and it takes a look at the overall, you know, how much capacity is actually being used by the vehicles on the roadway. Two of the things to note that the traffic operations analysis indicated was that the intersection of Washington Street at Walnut Street, there are several movements, I'm sure as most of you know, that are currently over capacity. It takes a few cycles for the queues to clear out, and also the same thing at Washington Street at Lowell Street. So, you know, right now, Washington Street at Walnut Street is currently seeing certain levels of congestion, specifically along southbound movements, and the same at Washington at Lowell Street. And finally, we reviewed the mitigation that was proposed in the traffic study. So the mitigation includes a couple of different components. The first was a transportation demand management program. Included in the study as part of the TDM program was that they included bicycle storage in the garage for the residents. We felt that there could be a little bit more of a robust TDM program. I'm going to get into that in just a couple minutes. The second part is that the proponent has offered to improve the intersection of Washington Street at Walnut Street by installing curb extensions, which will reduce the pedestrian crossing length. They're proposing, in the traffic study, they're proposing to install an additional southbound lane along Walnut Street adjacent to the project site. The installation of that lane would add some capacity to the intersection to alleviate some of the existing congestion that we experience now. They're proposing to install new pavement markings and upgrade all of the traffic signals to be more in line with modern traffic signals, and would use the latest technology. And at Washington Street at Lowell Street, they were proposing to upgrade the traffic signal timing and phasing plans to make it more efficient. So, let me go to the next one. So we looked at the mitigation, and then we looked at the City of Newton recommendations, any recommendations put forth in any planning studies. So we reviewed the Washington Street Corridor Planning Study. We believe that these recommendations are generally consistent with what was set forth in the Washington Street Corridor Planning Study, understanding that there are larger improvements that will be done along Washington Street that will need to be undertaken kind of as a whole rather than piecemeal. The other thing that we did recommend to the petitioner is to work with Zipcar to see if they can locate any spaces on the site. Now, we believe that, you know, with Zipcar, that would help market the project to people that may want to commute into the city, not own a car, but they still have access to a vehicle. The VHB has indicated that they've talked to Zipcar, but Zipcar doesn't commit to anything until there's an actual building or permits available. But we think that based on this location, they shouldn't have any problem locating some Zipcar spaces on the site. The next thing is to install electric vehicle charging stations on the site. So as more people purchase electric vehicles, these are going to be necessary, so that can be, you know, an attractive amenity for both the residents or the surrounding neighborhood if they need it. And also, we're suggesting to provide some sort of transit subsidy for the residents in some way. I think with the combination of the Zipcar and the transit subsidies, we can really sort of market this as a true transit-oriented development, at least for the commuter peak periods, understanding that, you know, people will be living there, commuting into the city. Not everybody will be, but it will be attractive for people to live there, commute into the city, and then still have vehicles available without having to purchase one. Not everybody's going to do that, but we think that it will help reduce the vehicular impacts. The other thing that we recommended was, instead of the installation of the second southbound lane along Walnut Street, is that we look into installing a bicycle lane along Walnut Street. We think this would enhance the multimodal facilities throughout the area, make biking safer throughout the area. We did a site visit and noticed that the city had actually painted a kind of a temporary bike lane out there. It's out there right now. So it would just be making that permanent. And again, it's up to, if the city wants to prioritize, more vehicular throughput or bicycle accommodations, we think both can work. So that was just another one of our recommendations that we're currently exploring. And finally, through the conversations with VHB, they had indicated to us that they've been working both with MassDOT and the city on further improvements to the Walnut Street Bridge. I'm going to let them talk about that a little bit more. We had a chance to take a look at the concept plan, but we haven't been able to review any analysis or any real solid plans, but I'm going to let them speak to that in their presentation. So, generally speaking, we think the methodology used in the traffic study was sound engineering. Any questions that we had specifically regarding the trip generation estimates, we thought they needed to tweak that a little bit. They provided new estimates to us, and we were satisfied with that. I believe the additional trips being generated will be minimal in the PM peak hour because the current uses on the site, there's a good amount of activity on the site right now, so that's just going to be replaced with the project. And in the morning, I think they were estimating, they can correct me if I'm wrong when they're up here, but maybe 90 to 100 additional trips during the morning peak period. So that's our review. We're still working with them on refining all of the mitigation for the project, specifically the Walnut Street Bridge, which we'll be talking about. Obviously, they'll have to do some level of analysis for that, which we hope to see when it's done. So that concludes the review.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Santos. Why don't we do this? Mr. Corner, you want to go next or you want the petitioner? Which would be better? Why don't we have the petitioner's person present? I'm going to let Mr. Cronin present after that. Then I'm going to open it up to questions, really questions primarily, but comments from my colleagues. Then we're going to take public comment. So, Attorney Buchbinder, who do you have for presenting for you?
Randy Hart from VHB, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All set? Good evening.
Good evening. Randy Hart with Vanessa Hangin in Brooklyn. We are the transportation consultant on the project. I wanted to talk about three things tonight. I want to just build on what Mr. Santos said and talk about a few traffic highlights of the project, which I think are very important. I want to provide you with the initial response to the peer review and specific comments that were raised. We are working on a document that will be provided to the city in the near future. And then we want to roll out for you some potential pedestrian enhancements along the Walnut Street Bridge, which is something we've been working on for some time, and we're finally at a place where we feel we can present it to the city with some level of confidence. Is this one on, Steve? Okay. So just a few highlights of the traffic work. As mentioned, the site is at Walnut Street and Washington Street, and today there are 6 points of access to the facility, 2 on Walnut Street and 4 along Washington Street. The redevelopment project offers an opportunity whereby we can consolidate those access points from a total of 6 down to 2, which is a significant reduction. So under the redevelopment plan, imagine the 4 red arrows disappearing, and the only 2 access points remaining in this area would be located here and here. So we're taking 6 down to 2, which is a substantial reduction in the number of conflict points that exist in this particular corridor, and that's a significant change that will have a safety and operational benefit of the project. The next thing is just want to highlight again is that the site in this location is a highly walkable site. The residents who choose to live upstairs will have access directly to the retail without leaving the site. They will utilize that. But they also have access to a number of facilities in the immediate vicinity, restaurants. They have Star Market across the bridge. They have CVS Pharmacy, Brew Pub, all kinds of different services and things that people need on a regular basis. But they have access to it without having the need to get into a vehicle to gain access. They also have direct access, as Mr. Santos said, to the bus routes and to the commuter rail right at their front door. And so we theoretically could take credit for the proximity to these uses and to the proximity to the T. We decided not to do so as part of our analysis, as we wanted to offer the city with a very conservative assessment of potential impacts for the project. The last thing in talking about highlights is just what some of the mitigation items are, at least that were proposed in the traffic study itself. We talked about the site access. Mr. Santos highlighted the Washington at Walnut Street signal upgrade, Washington Terrace upgrade, which I'll talk more about. But tonight we're going to roll out for you, and Damien's going to help me with the presentation on that in just a few minutes. We're also proposing optimization of timing and phasing at Washington and Lowell, and then on-site transportation demand management. So in providing response to the peer review, the really comments were in three specific categories. One is study methodology, the other is related to TDM and finding mitigation. So I'm going to break them down according to those topics. The only comment on study methodology was related to traffic generation, how we projected our traffic in the future. And there wasn't a real criticism of it, just rather a suggestion that we do an alternative calculation to see what the differential would be. We've performed that calculation, and with that change in place, which Mr. Santos, I think, alluded to, we would see a difference of 10 vehicle trips during the morning peak hour period, so really insignificant change there. And similarly, in the afternoon peak hour period, we'd see a difference of 16 vehicle trips. So I agree with Mr. Santos's conclusion that regardless of which approach we use, the results that we've presented will remain the same. There'll be no noticeable change as a result of an alternative methodology should we choose to go in that direction. In terms of the site plan and transportation demand management, there were a number of suggestions that Mr. Santos just outlined, and I just want to give you the latest on what we're proposing to do here. One is that the proponent is committing to two Zipcar spaces in the garage on the site, assuming that Zipcar will commit to us. And hopefully once the permit is in place, they will do just that. But we're committing to two spaces as part of this project. There have been ongoing discussions with Hubway and Bridge, but they've indicated thus far that they have no current plans to expand into Newton, but we're continuing to discuss, and to the extent they seek expansion in this area, it would make sense to try to bring them on site as well. The project is willing to include two EV charging stations in the garage with expansion of infrastructure for future. So start with two. If there's a need and demand for more, the infrastructure will be put in place to allow them to be put in at any time. The proponent is also evaluating the possibility for transit subsidies. How and what that would mean is something we're trying to work through, and we don't have any more detail on that at this point. And the parking will be decoupled from the unit rent. That's a question that was raised in the peer consultant's comments and something that we wanted to highlight tonight. So in terms of mitigation, I've walked through some of these. I just want to go right to the plan. As we've talked about in the past, we are proposing a full upgrade to the Washington and Walnut Street intersection with a brand new traffic signal with modern day equipment capable of multiple timing and phasing plans to meet the varying needs of traffic throughout the day. Your existing equipment doesn't allow the opportunity to do that, so it's a substantial change just by equipment change alone. We are also proposing to basically provide bump outs on three of the four corners. That'll do two things. It will provide some protection for the on-street parking that exists there today and will be maintained, but it will also shorten the crossing distance for pedestrians who choose to use that crossing. And there are significant pedestrian movements in this particular area. We also, as part of those bump outs in the crosswalk, are updating it so it meets the current ADA requirements for disabilities. Again, the intersection does not meet that requirement today, so it's another enhancement that's important. And as Mr. Santos suggested, you know, our traffic study showed initially a second lane on the approach, the southbound approach to the intersection. We have, based on the new recommendation, at least created a second plan for discussion purposes. That's what you see before you. It shows a single lane, and instead of another lane, it shows a 5-foot bike lane in the northbound direction and a 5-foot bike lane in the southbound direction. And we look forward to continue to vet both plans to see which of the two is more important and creates the right balance for the city. The other thing that has been added to this plan for the peer consultant's comments was some paint in the street and some signage to basically don't block intersections. So if there is a queue that extends to that period, the signs and the lines will hopefully prevent it from queuing past and blocking up the driveway movement. As I mentioned previously, the Washington Terrace is another area where we are proposing improvements. Today, Washington Terrace is very narrow. The pavement is in very poor condition. There's little to no delineation in terms of lines and really no signage. Under the redevelopment plan, we would be widening the street. We would be repaving it. We would be providing signs and lines as appropriate to meet current standards. So it would should be considered a major upgrade to what exists today and very much a way to accommodate the traffic that we intend to put there. So just to give you a quick visual of Washington at Walnut, I wanted to do this because it demonstrates to you how old the equipment is. It's very old, and it's actually visually hard to see given the new equipment and the back plates that are put on them and the size and scale of them. So the heads are much smaller than the current standards. The lenses are much smaller. They're not as bright, and they're very hard to see during certain periods. And so not only will the signal improve operations and safety, it will be visually much more accessible as well to the traveling public. The last thing I want to comment on is the potential for bridge modifications from Walnut Street. At one of the most early, or probably the two community meetings that we first had on this project, we heard a lot of people talk about, in a very passionate way, the need and desire to possibly connect southern portion of Newtonville with northern by some real enhanced pedestrian improvements. And it's something that the proponent took very, very seriously and immediately after commissioned VHB to take a really hard look at it. And it's taken us a really long time to get to a place where we could talk about it because it's not an easy answer to provide. We had to do a number of things. We first had to provide a structural evaluation of the bridge to understand the loadings that exist today. And then we had to start talking to DOT about it because they own the bridge, and anything that happens there would have to go through their approval process. And without having a level of comfort through discussions with them, we certainly didn't want to come into the community and talk in detail about it. Before we talk about what we're looking at for potential improvements, I want to just reiterate what's out there today. And today the bridge is a 6-lane bridge, 3 lanes in the northbound direction, 3 lanes in the southbound direction. Those lanes are separated by a 4-foot median in the center. On the east and the west side of the lanes, we have sidewalks that are 11 feet wide. But if you look at the rail on the east side to the rail on the west side, there's nothing in between but concrete. Everything is concrete, and that's all that exists. There's no soft measures, no amenities, no nothing. This is just a couple of snapshots to give you a sense on what it looks like on the ground. As I said, it's really all concrete and asphalt on the edges. But all hard materials, nothing to break up, nothing to draw a pedestrian into the area. So our initial structural evaluation did a number of things. First, it indicated that the current loads on the bridge are near capacity in the current configuration. And so we can't just go onto the bridge and start adding things to beautify it. It's not going to work. We wouldn't be allowed to do so. So what we had to do was figure out a way to create some capacity by looking at what's there and maybe changing things or bolstering it in order to allow us to have some additional capacity to play with to put some features on the bridge. And what we identified was that the existing sidewalks, 11 feet on each side, are very deep sidewalks, all concrete, very dense concrete. And so if you remove them down to the base and you replace them with a shallower pour and use lightweight concrete versus the dense form of concrete that exists, you actually can create some capacity on the bridge, which can then be traded for some amenities that we'd like to introduce. So we identified that as a possibility. And then we started looking at landscape features, and we realized through discussions and through the loading calculations that there is definitely an opportunity for landscaping features, but they have to be placed very carefully in certain locations. You want the heavy things over the piers. You don't want them in the middle of the dune. And you have to make sure that any landscape of any size would be able to drain. And you can't drain it on the surface, and you can't drain it into the roadway. We've got to drain it in a way that doesn't influence any of the joints, expansion joints that exist. So it's complicated how you would effectively do that. Another thing we looked at, and we looked at the operations on the bridge, six lanes, as I said previously, and we don't believe you need six lanes. We think there's an opportunity to narrow that a little bit and to use that additional width to improve the pedestrian environment, and that's the direction that we're trying to go. So we think we can go from six lanes to four lanes, but still have turn lanes for the six lane out on the edges on each of the two intersections either side of the bridge. So what our current proposal, and it's a work in progress, I want to be very clear, but what we're looking at thus far is we see an opportunity to increase the side width up to about 19 feet on each side, so about 8 feet on the east side, 8 feet on the south side. That's not insignificant. I think that offers us opportunities to do a lot of different things. As I said, we'd have to remove the existing concrete, so when we put it back, it'll be lightweight, but we can put back concrete that would be potentially colored. We can stamp the surface to make it look like pretty much anything we want, and add patterns to it to really dress it up. We think we can add a number of landscape treatments, as we said, and have to be strategically placed. We have to be able to drain them, so that complicates it a little bit, but we can believe we can do it. We're looking at potentially adding decorative lighting to give it some presence. We're looking at ways to dress up the fence to give it some life. And we're looking at areas to introduce art and displays and things like that. Another thing that I didn't have on the bullet list but is part of the plan would be to introduce bike lanes both on the northbound and southbound sides as well. And we feel like we can paint them to really make them stand out and be consistent with the other treatments that we're looking to implement. So this is a quick rendering of a plan view of the kinds of things that we're thinking about, and I apologize, I'm sure it's really, really hard to see at this scale, but just to give you a sense, the green in the on the edge of the bridge, the outside edge, is basically something like a planted bed where you can put some plants and greenery. And we're showing a thin edge of greenery on the curb edge as well, although I think that may be very difficult to provide, although we're going to certainly try to do so. Everything in between is the stamped concrete. We're showing a rectangular pattern, but I think, it could be a lot of different things. We're also showing areas for artwork, some planters. We would basically upgrade the 4-foot meeting because that cannot be removed. It is an expansion joint underneath it. It's basically two bridges parallel to each other, and the joint in the middle keeps them connected. So that can't be removed, but we can dress it up and use a similar type of pattern what we are on the edges down the center as well. We can, we think, put planters on the center island that could be maybe removed during winter months so that they weren't in the way of any snow removal activities. We're also looking at decorative lighting that would be introduced with sidebars that would either hold planters or banners or what have you. And so these are some of the initial ideas that we're getting into. We still have a long way to go with MassDOT, but the conversations that we have had in the last round of conversations, we had members of the city with us, have been very positive, and we think that will continue as the design unfolds. To give you a better sense of the ideas and the treatments that we're really thinking and better than a plan view, I'm going to ask Damien to come on up and take over the presentation.
Good evening. My name is Damien Chaviano with Mark Newtonville. Before I go into some of the imagery, I thought it was just worth taking a step back for a minute. On our site visit, we had a couple questions related to the commuter rail and the accessibility, which we recognize is challenged. The question came up whether or not part of our Bridgescape plan would include improving the accessibility to the commuter rail station. When we first started this project, it was the first thing that we keyed in on as one of the meaningful community benefits. As we've looked at trying to do something to improve the accessibility down to the platform, what quickly became apparent is any sort of work to make that area ADA accessible triggered a number of issues with the platform itself. So whether or not we were putting in elevator access that would be a direct through point to the platform itself, what it meant in turn was that we would have to take the platform also to an ADA accessible level. So the cost grew pretty exponentially, and it was at that point where we decided to change course based on the community feedback that we had and really focused our energies trying to figure out what we thought could be a really spectacular plan for the bridge. And so that's what you're going to see here today. Similar to a theme you've heard from us to date, we really think art is a meaningful way to have an impact on the bridge. As we've talked about at our project, we plan on activating both the interior and the exterior community space with artwork, and what we're trying to do is take that same theme and carry it across the north side over to the south side and really make the area much more pedestrian friendly for those people commuting back and forth over the bridge. In our minds, you know, we really see this space not as somewhere where people are going to gather and sit down and have a coffee or read a book, but we really see it as a connectivity point to making either side feel like it was put back together, and that's the intent here. As you can see, or as you heard from Randy, there are certainly some limitations with fencing and concrete and all of the components. So what we've tried to do is give you some vision for what we're thinking. Here is a couple examples of artwork that's been installed in various locations. On the right, you can see a parking garage that's been masked by metallic fencing that moves as the wind blows. You can see an office building in the top left corner there with various paneling that allows for light to reflect in different ways to create some beautiful imagery. And then we actually noticed this project, very simple, down in Boston, where there was some plastic detailing added to the fencing to add some color. We also wanted to add landscaping, as Randy mentioned, and you can see here we took some cues from the High Line in New York and really trying to make this area feel warm and inviting for people you know, coming to and from, and you'll see that carried out in our plan. And one of the other biggest components that we thought was really important was to add some meaningful lighting to the program. So we wanted this space to feel activated not only in the daytime but also in the nighttime, really encouraging commercial activity and pedestrian connectivity from either side at all hours. And so we took some cues from projects you're probably familiar with. You can see up in the top left corner, that's the Zakin Bridge. We actually engaged the lighting designer who designed the North Ave Bridge and the Four Point Channel on the left-hand side there, and he also did the work on the bridge over to the Moakley Courthouse. So with that in mind, we tried to do something very exciting. As you can see here, we've added planting beds along either side of the walkway to really make it feel like a floating art gallery. We've installed some metallic panels on the fencing itself to create some colors, and what we've done is in this rendering, we've installed some lighting in the plant beds that reflects upwards to really provide some nighttime activation to the space. You can see there's lamp posts that are installed throughout, and as I'll show you in the next image, there's further artwork that gets called out. Not sure if you can see that clearly, but on the lamp posts as well. What we tried to do, and this is still very much a work in progress, to try to also call attention to the T station, and we're still looking at ways to do something creative with that entry point to make it more noticeable. You can see on the left-hand side the bike lane that's painted in green as well, really trying to make it feel like you're in a, as I said, floating out art gallery is the theme that we've jumped on. You can see here the planting beds. Right now we're showing tall grass. The thought is these would be low drought plantings. We've looked at a number of different options as we continue through this process, but the idea is to make it beautiful and inviting. We'd want to make the space multi-purpose so that those planting beds, if people did want to sit down and chat, you had that opportunity. So what we wanted to do is really spark the discussion, give you guys some ideas of where we're headed with this, and hopefully we can continue to pursue this with the help of Mass DOT and DPW to bring this to fruition. Thank you.
Okay, Attorney Buffrender, is that your end of your presentation?
All right.
Mr. Corning, do you want to few years. I'll let you use the podium here, and then we'll take comments from my colleagues, and we'll then open it up for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In conjunction to the transportation strategy that's going to be released later on this year, the Planning Department believes this would be a good opportunity to exhibit their complete streets policy that the city is currently in draft form right now. The policy envisions streets that expand transportation choices within Newton by creating an integrated network of inviting facilities for choosing to travel on foot and bike, transit, motor vehicle, or a mix of these and other transportation modes. The city undertakes this policy with the goals of encouraging active lifestyles and overall well-being for residents, improving air quality and stormwater quality, and preventing transportation-related deaths and injuries. This is a quick slide. I believe Randy from VHC went over this already with a more up-to-date slide, but the curb extensions are a major aspect of the complete streets policy, and the enlarged sidewalks or enlarged crosswalks making it safer for pedestrians. And this is also a slide that Randy showed earlier. The new traffic signal equipment, curb extensions, and upgraded crosswalks at the intersection of Walnut and Washington are also aspects of the complete streets policy. The city the planning department agrees with the peer reviewer about the suggestion to add a bike lane on the southbound approach on Walnut Street. The planning department understands there are some capacity issues at this intersection. However, in order to provide safer access for bicyclists and pedestrians, the planning department believes the bicycle lane provides better multimodal upgrades to the intersection. An important part to note is that there is going to be two bicycle lanes on the bridge in this plan. The planning department believes that the bike lanes continued up on Walnut Street on both sides would provide the corridor a more consistent complete streets approach. As part of the transportation strategy, which will be out later on this fall, working with the consultants, different departments of the city performed what's called the transportation demonstration and exhibited some of the complete streets components that can be shown in several intersections throughout Newton. This intersection was chosen as the transportation demonstration. This is the intersection of Walnut and Washington. And this existing lanes on Walnut are wider than lanes that are typically known. So by saving the width of the lanes on Walnut Street, you can create 2 5-foot bike lanes and 2-foot buffer lanes on each side while preserving the parking. This is the other approach. So this is the northbound on Walnut from the intersection. You can see the bike lane on the right side. Conclusions. The peer reviewer agrees with the analysis performed by the petitioner's consultants that the project will have a minimal impact on traffic and that the level of mitigation is satisfactory. The city looks forward to working with the applicant to strengthen the proposed TDM, as Randy stated, the Zipcar, MBTA study, EV stations, bridge, and hubway options. One last thing that Michael noted was the analysis that needs to be done on the upgrades to the proposed Walnut Street Bridge and the recommendation for do not block driveway pavement markings on Walnut Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin and the other presenters. We've been joined by two of my colleagues, Councilor Jay Harney, Councilor Ward Council from Ward 4 and a member of the committee, and Councilor Brian Yates, Councilor at Large from Ward 5. Before we open this up to public comment, I want to see what questions and comments my colleagues have. I know I have a whole bunch, but you all get to go first. So Councilor Albright, then Crosley, and I'll take others. Go ahead, please.
When we had the site visit, there was a lot of conversation by the neighbors about the traffic queuing, the potential traffic queuing on Walnut Street. And when the three of us met with, the three from the ward met with the Foster Street neighbors, they brought up the same issue. So there was no discussion about queuing on Walnut Street going, you know, for people who are going south, for people going south. And I think there needs to be some discussion about that. It doesn't have to be tonight, but it has to be. Because there's a lot of feeling in the neighborhood that there's a lot of queuing and it just will make it worse.
Well, let's address that now for our peer reviewer first. Did you look at the queuing that's there currently, and what level of acceptability is it?
So we did look at the queues along Walnut Street southbound, and we do realize that there are extensive queues there right now. The proponent did propose a second lane along Walnut Street southbound. With the addition of that lane, those queues will essentially, they're not going to disappear, but they will be much more manageable. That addition of the traffic lane will significantly reduce those queues. As I said in my presentation, there's, you know, it's whether the city wants to prioritize the vehicle throughput and reduce those queues, or whether they want to prioritize the bicycle lane. You do have the opportunity to eliminate the queue, or not eliminate the queue, but to reduce the queue significantly. It's just a matter of priority, whether you want to do that or whether you want to provide bicycle accommodations.
Well, would you, for your next time you're here, give us how much you think the queuing will be reduced if you have a second lane? It's not just enough for us to hear that it's going to be reduced a lot.
Yeah, that's all included in the traffic study, and I don't have the numbers on me right now, but I believe the existing queues in the PM, and Randy can maybe verify those, for around 900 feet. I believe with the addition of the lane, they might have been reduced to maybe 300 feet or 250.
And have you verified that data?
Yeah, we that was in the traffic study. We reviewed that. All of that was part of the mitigation. So that was the mitigation that was proposed in the traffic study. That was their original proposal. So it's either that or the bicycle lane. Obviously, if you have the bike lane, you can't have that second lane.
Right. So I think what we need is more of a focus of attention on that problem, whether there should be a travel lane or there should be a bike lane. And I don't think we have enough information to make that decision tonight. So I would just like to focus some attention on that as we move forward.
So why don't we ask our peer reviewer to focus on that, and our planning department, because our planning department came up with a recommendation for a bike lane. And I think Councilor Albright is saying, well, what's the balance here? So we need more information on that. Go ahead, please.
I'll just ask one more question. I'll make a comment and then give it up for other people. But so I heard the conversation about the commuter rail, and I knew that it was going to be an expensive matter, having talked to the team myself, and I think that they thought was something in the neighborhood of $20 million. But what I would like to plant a seed for is some beginnings of a public-private partnership, some beginning of a fund to fix that train station. And as things happen over time, it could, you know, and I know Representative Khan is working on that. And so that I want to just plant the seed that we can begin the idea of some fund that gets created that you can contribute to, that others can contribute to, and that eventually we can do something about that train station.
Thank you, Councilor Albright. Councilor Crosley, and then Councilor Auchincloss, and I'm sure there's others.
Thank you. Councilor Albright always zeroes in on the critical questions right away. I would like to start with a bit of a compliment, and what's different about this project as I'm hearing it from other previous projects, and it has a great deal to do with, I think, the work the planning department is beginning to do, is it appears, and I like the sense of this, how you are coordinating with the city and a vision for the future. I understand you're at the beginning of this process, and these are it's the first time you've released these documents to us, so I am expecting, I'd like to start with a compliment, but of course our job is to challenge you to do more. And I'm expecting to see the connection between the city's vision and the city's plans for Newtonville Center and the road work that's planned there, which is not fully developed, but to be able to see by the time we get to the end of this process, really how all those connections are going to be made. So it's, you know, there's a lot going on the Washington Street corridor, there's a lot going on the Walnut Street corridor, and so there's as much, I think, a challenge to our planning department as it is to the developers. There are a couple of tools that would help me, and I'm guessing may help some other folks. One of the toughest things for me to read as a counselor are traffic analyses. I just have to say. I mean, they're just not exciting reading. If I need to, you know, go home after an 11 o'clock meeting and I want to go right to sleep, I can pick it up.
I think that's a good book, Counselor Cowley, but go ahead.
What's more useful to me, I raised this in two tools. One, I raised it the last time we met, that had to do with the relative scale of the building to the street. But I think it would be as effective for the street itself, which are cross-sections, plural, through a lot of the things that are being proposed. Certainly the bridge. Very exciting, some of the things you're talking about doing on the bridge. I could see tremendous improvement there. How the traffic works is one issue, but how it's scaled for people, and that we might be able to see it more easily. I realize this is early and that's a small plan, but to have a cross-section through the bridge at a large scale, maybe with, you know, a couple of the different ideas you're proposing illustrated, would be extremely helpful. Same thing with Walnut Street. You're proposing a couple of different ideas on Walnut Street, with the bike lane, without the bike lane, and so forth, and it would help me, and again, I'm guessing it might help a lot of other people, to see the relative scale of what you're proposing with those large-scale sections. Finally, you know, I understand that it's always the case. The community's very concerned about traffic and increases to traffic. And even though 10 different companies might be able to prove that this is going to have a, quote, minimal impact on traffic, the condition right now is very difficult. So I wonder if a traffic simulation would be a good idea in this case. We've seen these in public facilities when we ask a transportation engineering company to come in if somebody's proposing a new light at an intersection. And sometimes the traffic simulation shows us that actually it doesn't work, but sometimes it shows us how it can work. In case anybody doesn't know what that is, it's a video, basically, loaded with cars and trucks and so forth that we can watch and relative to the different plans that are being proposed.
So let me just, if I could, because there's a lot here, Councilor Clausley. So your first suggestion is some kind of video-enhanced simulation showing the traffic patterns, both existing and proposed.
And there's a couple of different proposals.
Understood. So existing and then the various proposals that are there. So can we just stop for a second, because it's a very important concept. Is that something the petitioner is able to do?
Now, I'd want an opportunity to discuss that with Randy and our team. I hate to say no, and I don't want to say no outright, but it's complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. I think there's been mixed success with them. So I'd just like the opportunity to discuss that, and then we can go back to within a week and let you know if we think we can do it.
Is that okay with you, Councilor Clausley? Could I just...
More than a week on this.
A week is... You don't need a week. I mean, you know, something reasonable. But I'd also then like to hear the planning department weigh in, regardless of what the conclusion is from the petitioner as to whether they want to do it or not. I want to hear what the planning department thinks about that as well. I'm sorry, Councilor Clark, I just don't want to lose the floor. Go ahead.
Thanks. So then just a couple questions that don't have to be answered now, but I was interested to see that the peer reviewer thought and the planning department agreed there could be a more robust transportation demand management program and with a bunch of specific suggestions. I wonder how you come up with the numbers, you know, that you'll have two Zipcar spaces and two electric vehicle charging spaces, but you'll provide the infrastructure for other things. And I wonder how you're coming up with some of the dimensions for, just as I should say, I'm wondering how you're coming up with some of the dimensions, which will be illustrated in the sections, for sidewalk lists and bike lane lists and that kind of stuff. So it's really kind of a numbers game, and if when you present this the next time, I'm wondering if you can discuss how you are coming up with some of those dimensions and quantities. That's it for now.
Great, thank you. Councilor Auchincloss?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to zero in on the relationship between the transportation plan you put forward and housing affordability. You know that they're intimately related. First of all, I appreciate that you clearly took to heart the transportation demand management suggestions that I made and others made last hearing. You mentioned that you're willing to decouple the parking spots from the apartment costs and that you're willing to potentially subsidize transit. That's a huge swing. If we're able to take out the cost of parking and then subsidize transit, the net effect when you couple housing and transportation together is that housing just became a lot more affordable for people. So I'd like to see more specific numbers in the fall about how that actually would play out. Right now they're kind of promises, but I think we need more granularity. But it's a good start.
Anything else? Councilor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to commend them for the presentation this evening. I think it was very good. I think it made things a lot clearer, and it showed a willingness for the developer to actually like interact with the community and do something, because we sit here on land use and have to kind of like push developers to just do a simple little improvement. So I just think it's a good atmosphere. I just think the public should be aware this is a pretty good atmosphere for us to see that we don't normally get from some developments, recent ones, in fact. So I just had a couple of questions on this. So first, the chair, do you believe that the public gathered here today is fully aware, like the peer review, what that means? Like, we get a lot of comments.
I explained what peer review was before, but I'll explain it again. It's
only that they understand that this is something that was critiqued in order to review the other plan to make sure that they don't think everybody's like in cahoots.
I thought, but I'll be happy to take a moment and thank you for raising it, that the peer reviewer is paid for by the petitioner, but it is an independent reviewer selected by the planning department whose task is essentially as a fellow professional to review the work product, the methodology of the traffic engineer hired by the petitioner, something that we do in many projects in the city that are more complex. I think it's something that's common, and the transportation experts, I think, are used to having essentially their peers review their work to make sure they're adequate. It probably keeps everyone on their toes, is my guess. Go ahead.
Thank you. Then just a couple other things. I don't know if we can get that picture back up again of the parking lot finished that showed the exits and the entrances. Is that easily put up on the screen? Or?
Can you... Did it take you a couple minutes?
It's not a big deal if it's not. I can go through without it. But.
While she's doing that, why don't you just
my question with this was, I didn't notice it through the planning, so for the transportation folks, is that coming out on Walnut Street and coming out on Washington Street and allowing folks to take left-hand turns on both of those exits seems to me to be a huge problem towards creating more bottlenecks, especially at particular times of day. So I haven't seen that addressed necessarily, particularly, or maybe I've missed it, but that we're looking at maybe possibly not allowing left-hand turns, especially when you're looking at Washington Street. I know you've created some distance now in that in that exit on Washington Street from the traffic light, but I still feel that that's a potential for a lot of bottleneck at certain times of day, particularly mornings and then evening rush hour. So I don't know on those pictures up there if it showed that we've addressed that. And if not, maybe the traffic, one of the traffic engineers can explain the rationale with that, with the traffic analysis. So where the blue lines are there, the blue arrows, are we saying that they can go right and left out of both exits?
Could you just come up to the microphone, please, so we'll get it on the record?
Yeah, so these four driveways are going to one of them, Washington Terrace, will be consolidated, so all the movements in and out at Washington will occur here. And so they'll be at one location, and we have analyzed what that would mean in terms of operations and the analysis. I'm just looking up to verify, but I recall that the operations were good. And a couple things to keep in mind about that is that we're locating it in a place that is a street today, which has activity. Okay, so there's an expectation that movement will occur there. These driveways today, a couple of them, particularly this one, is very narrow, and as you can see, on-street parking very close proximity to it. So if somebody in a peak hour has to sort of nose out, it's hard to see them. That's not what we're going to have here. We're going to have much better visibility, and we're going to have a concentrated movement in an area that you would expect a movement. So I think that's an improvement over operations, over what we see for today.
But in fairness, I think that those driveways are not particularly heavily used. And I don't know what actual observations you did about their usage.
Yeah, I mean, we have that in here. We can point it out at any time.
I think in response to Councilor Cody's comments for our next meeting or thereafter, I think it'd be really helpful to do some calculations of the number of people you anticipate going left, what kind of queuing there would be, what delays that would cause in Washington Street and backup. I think that's what you're driving at, Councilor Cody.
And I'm happy to do that. I'll just leave you with this note that when I say good operations, I mean that we don't really expect any significant queue. Two vehicles on the Washington Terrace approach, I think, is what I recall that we had in the future condition. So, but I'm happy to go over it in more detail at a later date.
That'd be helpful. Thank you. Go ahead, Councilor Cody.
Yeah, and I just have one more comment. That looks like a challenging bridge, and it's a great plan, and it looks awesome that everybody's addressing that. But is the pitch of the bridge going to prevent some of that from happening? I mean, that's a sight line issue. I know you addressed that. That's potentially some strategic placements that have to be done, but because of the commuter line, where they extended, increased the cap size, the cost size a few years ago, well, probably 20 years ago now, the bridges had to be elevated, and they kind of like really peaked. So is that a problem? And I don't think you can fix it. I mean, obviously, but
I guess I'm struggling to understand your question.
Well, so my question is, the bridge is like a sight line issue when you go
Absolutely.
Over the bridge. So as you come up and you go down into Newtonville itself,
mm-hmm.
You're going up and down, it's real tight. But from a pedestrian perspective, I can understand you can walk inside the issue. But does that create, so all the suggestions that you're making, does that, the way the arch is over the turnpike, does that create issues that may be a problem later? Like, do you foresee any issues with that as far as traffic, changing the lanes, squeezing them tighter,
and
increasing sight lines?
No, it's an interesting question. It is, and it's something we'll certainly take a harder look at. But my initial reaction to it is that we're really not changing the lanes. The lanes are there. And so what we're doing is expanding the sidewalk. So to the extent that there aren't sight distance issues today, we're certainly not creating any. I don't see a way that we would be. But we'll certainly take a closer look at it. And if we see anything at all, we'll let you know.
Okay. All set, Councilor. Anybody else? Councilor Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had a few questions. One about the short-term zones for deliveries, the two short-term zones. So I'm not sure who I'm addressing this question to.
I think the petitioner has started their proposal.
Say it again?
The petitioner has started, seems to me, their proposal.
Okay. So is someone going to stand up there to take the question?
Somewhere.
Oh, all right. So,
Thank you, Mr. Cornyn. That's fine.
So just wondering if there were two on-street parking spaces that are just never available, or if there would be like only early morning delivery times.
Okay.
Josh Quirling, professional engineer with Polar Engineering. I'm the civil engineer on the project. The two loading spaces that you're referring to are actually newly created spaces. We're, by consolidating all of those driveways, we're actually creating more on-street parking, and two of those additional spaces will be live loading spaces, essentially.
Sorry, they would be what?
Loading spaces.
Loading only, though.
So would they be large enough for a fairly large delivery truck? I mean, that's quite significant. If you drive anywhere in the city, you see the large delivery trucks double parking in the street, tying up traffic. So will we be able to pull in or not?
So what we have is we have room on site for the very large delivery vehicles, but anything, box size truck, they're 40 feet long. So anything that's a good size box truck, what you would normally expect, if I were to rent a moving truck, it wouldn't be the big one. It would be something of the smaller variety, a U-Haul. 40 feet is a pretty good size.
So you're going from our new storage facility in Newtonville Avenue to this?
I might say.
I asked because it is an irritant.
Yes, I apologize.
Yeah, it's an irritant on Beach and Washington. When deliveries come with some frequency to Cabot, and it's also an irritant in front of on Central Ave near City Pizza, where, I don't know if you know this area, but trucks block on Central Ave as they, so you have to go around. So those who are affected who live in the area, I live about actually under half a mile from the site, so I'm pretty familiar with it. So if those delivery trucks could just use, why wouldn't they just use the on-site?
They would.
Not on the street, though, because that sounds like it will take away. I understand you're creating more parking, but this would be parking that would never be available on the street.
Correct, but I think it would make sense so that it's not tying up and congesting things internal to the site. If you get fresh bread deliveries, for example, are in the same size vehicle that I'm referring to, would fit in that 40-foot. Space. If there was a refrigerant truck for a restaurant, those are the smaller size trucks that would fit into a 40-foot stall. So I think it makes sense to have the area on the street designated for that, but it's certainly something we could look at.
Yeah, I would say if you could just look at that, because any on-street parking that's not made available is going to be, more of a challenge. I also wanted to ask, if you reviewed the Green and Peterson study related to the Austin Street project, their parking study, and I asked that because one of their conclusions was that there would be enough parking for businesses south of the pike as long as customers were willing to park in available parking north of the pike. Now, since this project is asking for almost 100 parking waivers, would change, I would think, their conclusions if they had known about this. I'm just wondering if you looked at their study.
I'm fairly certain that we looked at it some time ago. I honestly don't recall what it said exactly, but we know as part of what we're doing here that we feel, based on other studies that have been done in the city, that the parking ratio we're providing is adequate. And as I said to you before, from a traffic perspective and a traffic generation perspective, we didn't take all the credits we could for what's around us, whether it be the T or the bus or the opportunities for retail and social activities. Had we done that, maybe the parking could even be less. But I think we're taking what we think is necessary based on other studies and other residential communities in this particular area. We did do a study, and I don't remember exactly what the result was, but I know we applied it here. We did study at several in Newton residential communities recently in the last year and a half to, sort of get the space requirements for this. And we looked at that as well as other publications when we applied the rates in this particular location. So we're comfortable with the number.
Right, but that doesn't really answer my question that you might have reviewed that old study and you can't remember.
It's been a long time, so I don't want
to. Why don't we just ask if you could, Mr. Hart, for next time, just let us know. If you haven't had a look at it, please do so.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Other questions, Councilor Norton?
So when you say you're evaluating the transit subsidies, does that mean you are sure you're going to do them and you're thinking about how much it will be, or you're evaluating whether or not you're going to do them?
We're evaluating whether or not we're going
to offer them, and if so, at what amount. So we're trying to better understand the demand for them and incorporate it as part of, someone brought up earlier, the decoupling of parking. If we look at the total package, we think it is all intertwined, so we're looking at it holistically, and plan to be back to you this fall with where we net out.
Okay, and in terms of the bicycle spaces, I'm trying to remember where that was, 180 bicycle spaces, are you looking at also adding bicycles? Like the development at River Street in Waltham, they actually offer bicycles for the residents. I don't know how many. Is that something that you are looking at or would be willing to look at?
To be honest, that's the first we've heard of it. What we have been looking at is a bike repair station that would be open not only to our residents, but to the general public as well. But that's an interesting thought, and we'll take a look at that.
Okay, I'm on the same here. So the bridge, I thought the photos with the artwork on the bridge were really interesting and dolled up the place quite a bit. But when you said that you would have to go from 6 lanes to 4 with turn lanes at the edges, I don't really know what that means. Does that mean what it sounds like, reducing the amount, so reducing from 6 lanes to 4? And if so, I guess that would be a concern because you do acknowledge there would be more vehicle trips. So there would be more vehicle trips, but the bridge would be narrower, if I understand that.
Yes, that's correct. The thing to keep in mind is a couple of things. First, we are looking to completely replace the signal at Washington and Walnut, which is a constraining feature of how the bridge operates and the queues that will be on the bridge. And by introducing a new modern-day signal capable of multiple timing and phasing plans, we can better accommodate the movement. So we're creating efficiency by putting that in place. If we add the lane in the southbound direction, we're adding more efficiency. If we add a right turn lane on the eastbound direction, which we're suggesting to do, we're adding more efficiencies. And by doing that, we're able to consolidate the queues. So my goal in putting a plan forward for 4 lanes as opposed to 6 was to show a queue on the bridge that is no more than what exists today and hopefully significantly less. My analysis thus far has shown that I can do that. Okay, and that's what I'm living by. So that's what we're shooting for, and that's, I believe, what we'll end up with. So, you know, the thing to keep in mind, too, is that you need the third lane on the northbound approach has some value because it provides queue storage. The third lane on the southbound approach has no value whatsoever because there's never more than one lane of traffic loading into that particular area with the current configuration at the signal.
You mean the lane that turns into Austin Street?
No. I mean, if you're coming from Walnut Street southbound, or you're coming from Washington Street east or west, and you want to go over the bridge, there's only one vehicle making that right turn, yet there's 3 receiving lanes for that vehicle. It's unnecessary to have that. So the northbound has some value in the third lane, but the southbound, there's absolutely no value for the third lane in that area.
Okay, I don't really understand that, but I'll let that go. My last point would just be that, as I said, I live less than a half mile from the area, grew up there, and there have been some changes recently when City Pizza came in and Cook and the paint bar. You can no longer find parking along Washington as easily at all. And I'm okay with it because overall those are, I think, a huge benefit to the area, and I would say the same thing for the other half of Newtonville Center. When Rox came in and Brewers Coalition, all of a sudden you really could never find parking conveniently along Walnut anymore. There's still the Austin Street lot, obviously. So it is less convenient in that way, but it's because of a benefit to the area. So I would say, as you're going forward, when you say the project will have minimal impact on traffic, and you heard some tittering from the crowd, I think this is just a comment, and I'm just going to make comments, I'm just going to rebel out here, that it would be more compelling and believable to people if you say, you know what, there is going to be a little bit more traffic, it is going to be harder to find parking, but, you know, look at how the bridge looks, look at this, look at that, look at the availability of this housing, whatever you think the benefits are and how you want to sell it. I just think that would be more, honest, it's not like you're being dishonest, but just more believable. So.
All set, Councilor Norton. Anybody else? Councilor Albright.
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask this question.
Oh, no, go ahead.
It has to do with the bridge. when Councillor Auchincloss talked about the bridge earlier, months ago, some of us joked around, you know, what is he trying to do, make a Ponte Vecchio here in Newton? But now that I see what you're doing, I'm wondering if it's possible to have street vendors on the sidewalk in the summertime. Is it wide enough for that?
I think with 19 feet, we could certainly accommodate that. I mean, we've envisioned kiosks in our plaza space, and I certainly don't see why we couldn't carry that theme out to the bridge as well. We haven't thought of it to date, but I think it could be a great idea, and I think the space would accommodate for it.
Thank you.
All right. We've been joined by Councillor Schwartz, Councillor at Large from Ward 6, and Vice Chair of the Committee. Other questions by my colleagues? I have a number of them, so let me try to put them out there, perhaps not in order of presentation or necessary importance. The first has to do with the bike lane issue. There was an interesting article in today's Boston Globe, I believe it was by the president of the City Council in Boston, talking about true dedicated bike lanes, ones that are separated by bollards, so there's a bike lane, then a sidewalk, then a street. I, for one, have been quite troubled by the way we're building bike lanes in the city. I love the bike. It's great. I think the way we're doing it is really unsafe. And, frankly, creating a lot of problems between cars and cyclists. We hear passionately and quite appropriately from advocates for biking. We don't tend to hear as much from folks who drive their cars every day. But we're talking about complete streets and sharing it. So I am wondering both from the planners, peer reviewers, and our planning department, what your thoughts are. If you're going to create some kind of bike lane there, could you do that in a true, dedicated, really safe fashion? How feasible is that? Could you move the project back a foot or two or three off the sidewalk to accommodate that extra space? What would that look like? Even if it's only for the intersection, and I'd ask the same question for the aspects of that over the bridge, it seems to me if we're going to be designing this stuff, we ought to do it the right way. I'm not asking for a response this evening, but I really would like some much greater thought put into it rather than just painting a bunch of lines and white and some green shading. We did not talk about, and I did not hear any analysis of the internal parking garage for the residents, either in terms of the size of the spacing or the turning radii. Did our peer reviewer look at that yet?
Yeah, we did take a look at the parking layout, and we're satisfied with the circulation, the turning maneuvers, and the parking space sizes.
And they're how big, if I can ask?
I don't have that offhand. I know that I don't have the dimensions on right now. So 9 feet by 18 feet.
So they're standard. In other words, we're not having any... They're standard width and slightly shorter in length. Is that the answer? And can I ask, has our planning department reviewed that as well? Mr. Cronin, have you had a chance to review that yet?
The turning radii of the garage?
The garage, the layout of the garage, the turning radii, the layout of the spaces. Have you had a chance to analyze that?
Not as of yet, Mr. Chairman.
Would you do so, please, before we meet again on this aspect of it? I'd like a similar analysis, if you've not done it yet, on the parking lot. Have you done that, Mr. Santos?
On the
exterior parking lot?
Exterior parking lot. No, we haven't. We haven't done that.
Okay, I'd like that done as well, if you would, please. Certainly, we have plans, and they're talking about size of spacing. I'd also like to make sure. I want to pick up on something Councillor Norton said about the commercial vehicles. Frankly, it seems to me that if we're going to have loading areas for commercial vehicles. It all ought to be done on site, and the idea that we do it on Washington Street, I think is a mistake, and I'd like to see some more consideration from the developer about being able to do all of that loading through the back entrances where it's not going to interfere with traffic. It is notwithstanding that we put commercial spaces there, I think we can all attest to the number of commercial vehicles that double park because they're going to just unload for 10 or 15 minutes, and it causes a huge traffic tie-up. Let me just ask a couple of other questions. I know you talked about the access to the key, and I presume you looked at that, Mr. Santos, as part of your analysis.
Yeah, we believe with the improvements that they're proposing, there will be enhanced pedestrian access to the commuter rail station, yes.
How is that?
Well, they're improving the pedestrian crossings across Washington Street, which I think is the major...
Did you walk down to the key station?
No, that's one thing I didn't do. I think
I'm going to urge you before you come here again to actually take a walk down to that key station, as several of us did during the site visit. That's not the developer's fault. It's not their key station. I think it's fair to say, for lack of a better word, deplorable. And I think every counselor here would probably agree with that. It's not handicapped accessible. It's a very steep staircase. Even those in reasonably good condition, I expect, have a hard time accessing it. So I think it'd be helpful, because if we're going to make conclusions, and you're going to make conclusions that transit access is better, I think a visit there may change your mind, at least as to that station. Okay?
Sure.
Let me, if I could just, I want to add, planning department, have you had any conversations with the mayor's office, our state delegation, the MBTA about trying to put in motion some improvements here? I know Councilor Albright just alluded to that just a minute ago. Have you done that yet?
I can say the planning department has. I cannot speak for other departments if they have reached out to MassDOT, MBTA, or not.
Would you, before we reconvene, clearly that's something that would be a benefit regardless of whether we do that project or not. I certainly would think the petitioner would welcome that kind of improvement. I think, frankly, we all would, recognizing this outside of our control. I want to just go back one more question, and I realize I don't want to monopolize the time. The bridge work that's being proposed here, I think what Councillor Cody was driving at is the bridge is on a very rather steep arc. And the bridges that you've looked at and are using as comparisons, are any of them designed in a similar way? And could you give us some illustrations about how you deal with that challenge?
I think the bridges that were shown by Mr. Chaviano were really just to show you some elements that have, you know, been treated on a bridge to give you an idea of things we're thinking about. We haven't, you know, tried to compare what we're trying to do here with other locations. That has not been done.
I think it would be very helpful for the next time you come in to do that analysis, and also to do it as an analysis. This is a bridge over the turnpike. It's not a bridge over the Ponte Vecchio. It's not the Ponte Vecchio. I can think of many other bodies of water where we have beautiful bridges elsewhere in the world and in the United States, but we're talking about going over the turnpike. So I would urge us to look at what others have done with those constraints, understanding you're not going to be able to change the bridge itself and how that looks and what kinds of things you put there. I'd be, for example, concerned about kiosks on a bridge that's over a four-lane or seven-lane turnpike there. But I'd also like to hear a little more about the public art that you're envisioning and what that would look like. And I think in response to Councilor Norton's observations, I know that you've illustrated that you think reducing the lanes will actually make traffic flow better. And I'd like to see a little bit more discussion of that next time as well, if we could, please. Okay. Again, sorry for monopolizing the conversation. Others, questions, comments from my colleagues? I'm sorry. Anybody over here? Oh, I didn't think the planning board did, but they're welcome. Go ahead, please.
So I think these may be questions for Mr. Santos. One of the things I flagged in the report is that the Court Street and Austin Street traffic increases are put into the no-build baseline. And I was wondering if you took those out of the no-build baseline, how that would change the apparent impact of the Washington Place project.
Well, the trip generation for the project will still remain the same.
In fact, because the denominator, if you were thinking 5%, 10% more traffic.
Yeah, I don't know what the percentage would be, but the traffic impacts of the project would be the same. They would be the same exact number.
But from a resident's point of view, the question is kind of before and after and relatively how much worse would it be in percentage terms?
If the Austin Street project was not included.
If the baseline did not contain the Austin Street and Court Street traffic.
So if we just took the existing traffic volumes and added the project projections to it.
But is there a percentage?
Yeah, I don't have that. I can't imagine that it would be a very high percentage, but I don't have that off the top of my head right now. And we could calculate that from the traffic study.
Fine. And just one really kind of footnote question. In looking at your report and hearing your remarks, you sometimes use the phrase generally consistent, and I'm curious as to whether that means some things are completely consistent and others are not, and if there are things that aren't consistent, could those be identified?
When I say the mitigation is generally consistent with what we saw in the Washington Street Corridor study, so the Washington Street Corridor study had a kind of a grand proposal for a cross-sectional road diet on Washington Street, a mid-block crossing at the post office, and various other improvements. So that's, this project is not installing all of that, so that's kind of why I use the term generally consistent. They're doing some of it, but not all of it.
Other questions from Commission? Two follow-up questions then. One, there's a proposal to put a crosswalk at the post office. I think I saw that at least in one analysis. And I wonder about the safety of that given the traffic patterns and also what that would do to the traffic flow. I don't know if you've looked at that or not.
I know Mr. Hart had looked at a pedestrian analysis in the traffic study. They did pedestrian counts across Washington Street at that point. It was kind of just left at that. There was a number, I can't recall what the number of pedestrians was, but the pedestrians were generally heaviest during the commuter peaks. I don't believe that the installation of a crosswalk there would be safe until you install all of the other improvements along Washington Street recommended in the corridor study. So I wouldn't put a crosswalk there across the four lanes of traffic. I think that would have to go in as part of the overall.
So your recommendation is no crosswalk at this time?
No crosswalk at this time until all of the other improvements, the long-term improvements are in place.
Planning Department concur with that? All right. One other question, and it relates to the choice of verbiage you used earlier. I think in several places you used the term adequate to describe your findings. Could you elaborate on what you mean by that term? Because adequate may mean great, or it may mean just okay, and it would help us if we knew what your thinking was.
So when I say the traffic study methodology was adequate, I mean that it was up to all of the standards that the professional traffic engineers use. So, everything that they did was by the book. There was nothing out of the ordinary. Like I mentioned, the trip generation, we had a couple of questions about that, so they kind of clarified that for us. So everything that they did was up to standard.
I think it's important to clarify that, because we're relying on you, and what you're telling us is their work was sound. Is that a fair?
Their work was sound.
Okay,
yes.
That's very helpful. Councilor Norton had a question, and Councilor Schwartz.
Yeah, just one more that I forgot to ask before. I actually went to the meetings about the Washington Street Corridor study. And unfortunately, when I tried to go back and look at the reports again, the links are not working. We updated our website and that, so I have a request in to get those so I can look at it again. But my memory is that the reason it was a competitive grant, and Councilor or then Alderman, that might have been at those meetings as well, There was a competitive grant, and my memory of why we were chosen is that there were so many accidents along that corridor between Newton Corner and West Newton. So when you said that it's not a particularly unsafe intersection, that's not, like I said, I would have liked to be able to quote it, but that's definitely not my memory.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the corridor study. I think in this specific area, the intersections that they looked at were not exceeding any average regional average for signalized intersections or roadway segments, but the corridor as a whole could very well be, you know, experience a high crash rate. Just the specific intersections that they looked at did not.
I think I'd want to know, though, because obviously cars that are going in that area are going to be traveling along that whole corridor, pretty short corridor.
We have the study. We can provide you with that information. I don't have that right now.
Okay.
If you do it for next time, Mr. Santos, that'd be great. I'm sorry, Councilor Norton, are you all set? Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I was otherwise indisposed earlier, but so if any of my questions have already been answered, please just tell me, and I'll get it to my colleagues.
We'll tell you. Don't worry.
I'm sure. The main question that I had in reading your analysis and your report was this finding that the fact that the level of service generally is not going to change, except for, I guess you said, with the exception of the weekday PM at Walnut and Washington, which is actually a really important time. So I guess what my first question is if other than that time period, it doesn't change, it sounds like you're kind of on the cusp, right? So it's enough of an addition, these 89 or 85 or whatever car trips between the no build and build condition that it pushes it to a different level of service at that particular time. Would it be fair to say that if there were more, and probably not that much more, cars generated, perhaps 10 more, I don't know, 20 more, would that push the other time periods to a different level of service? Are we, do you know what I'm saying? It seems like you're saying that generally it doesn't change the level of service,
yeah,
but at that one time period it does. That implies to me that we're kind of on the cusp, and that would imply that if the calculations are just a little off, that we might be underestimating the impact.
I think this is a question for the petitioner, but I can probably answer that. I know the intersection of Washington Street at Walnut Street is either it's at the operating capacity, some movements are at the operating capacity, so anything that you add to it is obviously going to push it over whatever that cusp is. So yeah, it's very close to the capacity, so you know, any additional trips that you add to that movement or to the intersection would eat up whatever remaining capacity the intersection has, yes.
Okay, so then I guess my follow-up question is that obviously, you think that the mitigation measures are going to help address that. The question is, how much room do we get from the mitigation below that full capacity? Because I want to know how close we're cutting it with these projections, because obviously they're just projections and they could be off by a factor, however small.
Yeah, I think this is a question for the petitioner.
Hey. Just looking quick back at the traffic study, if you implement what's outlined in there for improvements at the signalized intersection, you take a level of service F during the weekday morning and the afternoon, which is what it is today, and you improve it to a level of service C. So you can see there's a fair amount of gradation between the two with the improvements as outlined in the traffic study.
And if you don't mind my following, so how much more cars, are there more trips, 80, 90 to what? Would it change from F to C instead of D or C? How tight is it? I'm trying
yeah,
to get a sense.
I can't answer that, and the reason is because, first of all, you'd have to run it to understand, but it's a function not only of the volume, but where that volume is at the intersection. So certain movements will be closer to capacity than others. If you put all the volume on that movement, it'll have more influence than it would to be on a movement that has a lot of capacity available. So you can figure that out if you'd like me to. I'd be happy to do so at the next hearing. And that way I would do it would be I would use the distribution of volume around the intersection and just keep adding volume until you hit the limit, assuming the distribution remains the same.
Sure.
If it changes, that goes out the window. But it's a way to get to the number that you're looking for.
And then the particular movement that I'm most concerned about that didn't seem to be mentioned at least as much in the peer review of your study was the northbound. They talked a lot about southbound through the Washington Walnut intersection, but not much about the northbound. And I've expressed this before, I'm a little concerned about the entry to the parking lot being a left turn when you're going north there. So do you recall, you might not have it in front of you, but how close those numbers are as far as level of service and pushing it past the point of acceptable?
The left turn, I don't have it.
Not a left onto Washington, but a left onto the...
from Walnut into the
into
site.
The parking lot, yeah.
Yeah. I don't recall what it was, but I know it was in the acceptable range, which means it's a B or better. I don't remember exactly what it was. But one of the things that came out of the peer review was a recommendation for some demarcation in that area for do not block. So, you know, the delay that I looked at this closely, and the delay was not significant to make that left-hand turn, but by opening the intersection, you know, with the markings, I think it will even diminish the delay that we anticipated without it. So I'm comfortable saying it's going to work fairly well based on the analysis we provided you.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Of course, that sparks two other questions that I have. So I'd like to find out from the planning department when the city is planning on doing its changes, if it is, to the signalization at Washington and Walnut, regardless of whether this project goes forward. In other words, what changes are proposed no matter what? Because a lot of what we're having here is assumptions about what will happen if we make certain improvements in the traffic. And if we made the improvements in the traffic, we'd know, and then we could gauge this project better. So I'd like to understand that.
I believe it's 2018 when Newtonville will be studied. I believe West Newton Square is the first, and then Newtonville is second, in terms of transportation, traffic, implementation.
Implementation is 2018?
I believe so.
Okay. Could you verify that for us? And then, if we could for the next meeting, could you comment that the peer reviewer and the project engineer, what, if any, change there would be to the traffic patterns if we shifted from the amount of residential that's proposed to, say, a mix of 30% office and 70% residential, or 50% office and 50% residential, and what that would do to traffic at peak hours? And otherwise, it'd be helpful to have that analysis if we could, please. Okay. Anything else? Folks, thank you very much. Thank you for your patience in taking our questions, some of which may, thank you for your patience. Let me ask this. How many people, leaving aside the group presentation, how many people wish to speak this evening? Show of hands, please. Okay. Good. So why don't we start with this gentleman over here, and I'll work my way around the room, and then I'll let the group presentation speak. Let me be very clear. If there are other groups in the future that want to put together an organized presentation, this is an experiment for us. So just talk to me in advance. Shoot me a quick email at my government email address. Give me a call, and we'll walk through the logistics of that. Yes. Before you begin, sir, I think go ahead.
Thank you. I have a motion from Peter to continue our public hearing until the next scheduled meeting. Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So the Planning and Development Board will continue its hearing until the next public hearing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Good evening, sir. Name and address, please.
My name is John Wilgordon. I'm the owner of the Cattle Restaurant at right at the corner of Washington and Walnut Street. First, I want to thank you and the city, most of the fans that supported me for almost 40 years, 37 years in Newton. I was hoping to stay a little longer, but obviously things are coming to an end. It's not easy to support this project. That's going to put me out of business. Then I ask myself, what are we really trying to save? I've been there every morning, pretty much 5-6 days a week. It's a group of old, disparate, crumbling buildings. It's not a beautiful sight. When I look at this picture and then I look at the new project, it's easy to fall in love with the new project. I don't know about the dynamics of traffic and all that stuff. It's not my end, but I can tell you, for somebody that has been on that corner, it's disparate. It's a way. When you look at the pictures from the early turn of century, back in 1910, 15, when it was part of the village, there was coherence. There's no coherence. I get invited always when it's village day or something, Newtonville. I don't want to go there because I'm not relevant. I'm not part of Newtonville. We are on a highway, on an island called Washington Street Express. Cars fly by. So there's no village spirit. And then this developer comes and he wants to build a village. I mean, this is a village with park-like setting, and I have the possibility of coming back with a smaller restaurant and put an outdoor cafe, and it's a dream like to put an end to my career in some sense. So for me, it's much easier after studying and talking with the developer several times, the validity of this project. It's tested, the man has done it many times, and the best thing is not a fly-by-nighter. He lives in West Newton, he's been a resident of the city for 20 years or plus, I don't know how many years, but that's not the relevant part. So I am supporting the, even though I am going to be dislocated for a few years, I feel when I look at the beauty and coming from any side, looking at that gorgeous building and then looking at this, I mean really, these buildings, it just makes no sense to me. That's what I want. And thank you again for the city.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Others on this side of the room who wish to speak, show of hands, anyone? Yes, come on up, please, sir. Good evening. My name's Robert Smith. I live at 40 Foster Street. And we're the neighbors who have put together a petition expressing concern about the size of the development. We're not objecting to the development, per se, but it's the exception to the current zoning. I just want to point out, in terms of the traffic study, I think it'd be helpful to hear what would the traffic situation be like if they built within the existing zoning, which I believe would be three stories, with all the traffic improvements and enhancements. Because I think the concern we have with the density of the project, traffic is a small piece, but I'd like to know the difference between a three-story and a five-story as we look at the question of should there be an exception to the current zoning.
Great, thank you. Our peer reviewer and our project engineer are still here. I presume you can do that relatively quickly. Is that fair? I'm seeing nods of the heads, yes. Don't have to get up, thanks. Okay, next, please. Anyone else on this side of the room? Come on up, please, ma'am.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Joe Hewell of 27 Whitney Road. I just have two things to say. One is the traffic from the schools at 3 o'clock is too bad coming from Gay Middle School, and I would think it might be worthwhile to expand the study to 3 to 4. I know it was 4 to 7 even, but 3 to 4 can be very bad, especially on the southbound lane. So that's one issue. And the other is the commuter rail, which the accessibility is bad, but if you look at the schedule between 1 o'clock in the afternoon and 7:30 at night, you cannot get a train into Boston. The train from Wellesley, all 7 Wellesley, for 7 hours, they skip Newton completely. And I think that's something that has to be addressed as much as the accessibility. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else on this side of the room? Okay, seeing none, anyone on this side of the room? Yes, sir, come on up, please. Good evening.
Scott, how are you? Good evening. My name is Tom Krause. I live at 480 Walnut Street, and I'd like to clarify that I'm speaking personally, not as a member of the area council. And I would like to preface by stating that there are a lot of issues in the development of this size, and clearly we aren't addressing many of them right now, and I'd only like to speak to one. And I think we can all agree that Newtonville was substantially damaged when the pipe was depressed into the village and split the north and the south side. And the efforts to diminish that psychological barrier are very valuable, and I would like to commend the petitioner for offering an idea that goes beyond the typical offerings. It is frustrating to me as a resident when potential benefits are sometimes limited by lack of sufficient nexus to allow them to be considered. And so I think the fact that they are offering to go beyond what is would normally be included is commendable. And I think that it's important to consider that an enhancement like they're proposing on the bridge is not something that we could expect to see the city do on its own. That we've been trying to get sidewalks widened for 30 years, and the bridge work would certainly be outside of that scope. I strongly support the conversion of the third auto lanes into into bicycle lanes, and I have personally witnessed several potentially fatal accidents that were near misses of bicyclists utilizing the left turn lane while vehicles were also using it as a left turn lane. I also think that the addition of the planters, if DOT allows them, between the pedestrian walkway and the traffic will add a significant psychological benefit for pedestrians. The city is committed to improve the hardscape of Walnut Street on the south side of the bridge in 2018. And the feedback from the Newton in Motion demonstration affirms that the earlier studies are true, that widening the sidewalks, allowing outdoor seating, is a priority to the residents. I'm a little concerned about the planning department's suggestion to continue bike lanes through the village, because that would go contrary to widening the sidewalks. But in addition to that, we're looking at three developments within Newtonville. The cities on Walnut Street, Austin Street Partners, and this listeners. And I would really encourage the planning department to sit down with all three parties, themselves being one, and work out a common theme for lighting, for amenities. Villages that are developed with a holistic view, such as was done in Dedham Square on High Street, get a very improved tone, and it helps to pull it together. The city tends to look at things piecemeal. If we can take the advantage of the time that all these things are happening at the same time, and if the planning department can coordinate among the three, I think it would be great for bringing the city, the village back together.
Thank you, Mr. Krause. Others who wish to speak, anyone else? Come on up, please. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Allison Conant. I live at 68 Brookside Ave in Newtonville. It's about four blocks from the project site. I just want to say something really specific about the Walnut Street bridge over the pike. I would say don't be fooled by some of the things that the developer is proposing to beautify the bridge, because I have walked across that bridge many times, and the problem, which Sam and Laredo has mentioned, is it is over a huge highway. The problem is the noise. And when I walk over the bridge, I want to walk as fast as I can to get to the other side. People are not going to sit on benches. They're not going to eat ice cream cones. It may make the bridge look better, but people are not going to hang there. And there's nothing we can do now about the pipe. But that kind of, that's not a transportation, that's not ameliorating really anything significant.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? This won't preclude you from speaking at later meetings. Is Mr. Arnes and Dr. Arnstein here? Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Mr. Chairman, I have a question just to clarify. We didn't know that the evening would be largely devoted to traffic, and you said that comments should be restricted to traffic issues. So
I meant that to my colleagues.
Okay.
Your comments and the members of the public can be anything they want.
Okay. Thank you.
just to remind counselors and for anybody else who wonders, we're an organization called Neighbors for Better Newtonville. We are essentially trying to encourage the council to leave the zoning in place for this development instead of changing it, so that the development will be smaller and more in tune with what Newtonville really is. I just wanted to say that by way of context. We did speak a month ago, and so this is a continuation of that. And I want to just make a few remarks, and then we'll call on various other people. Those of you those of you who don't live in Newtonville may not appreciate what a great place this is to live. Newtonville is not as wealthy as many other parts of our city, as I pointed out last time. We're a diverse community where a great variety of people can live comfortably, safely, and with a sense of supportive community that rivals any village in or out of Newton. Newtonville is a wonderful place. It is worth keeping the qualities that make it so. All of our city is now in the grip of a real estate boom. Developers have been moving in across the city with increasing aggressiveness, and now they're getting a signal from the city administration that they are more warmly welcomed than ever. Tear downs are rampant in some sections of town, while in Newtonville, the biggest threat is from large developments. The project we're concerned with here, the Ore Project, is worth fighting about on its own merits or demerits. We will not be talking much about the greater implications for Newton, but to be clear, if the CORF organization gets the ore block rezoned, it will add a great deal of tinder to the development fire. We do not want to see Newtonville nor the rest of Newton continue on a path of urbanization and gentrification that has no mandate from the citizenry. This evening, we will continue to highlight some of the major problems that the ore project is likely to cause, as proposed. You will hear presentations about traffic and parking, which is the lifeblood of local business. And we will talk about some of the justifications put forward in favor of the development that will help less affluent people who need housing, that it is transit-oriented, that it will increase the tax base of the city. We want to question and refute those narratives. In the end, Mr. Corson and his associates are business people, and there is a very great deal of money to be made here. If Mr. Corf gets the zoning change, waivers and special permits he's asking for, he will make a lot of money. One expects a businessman to try to profit, from the project, but we, residents and counselors, have other agendas, and while Mr. Corf wants what's good for him, we should be insisting on what's good for Newtonville residents. The two interests are not always the same. Newtonville is moving very quickly, too quickly, toward dense urbanization, very unlike the village sense of place that's so wonderful here and is irreplaceable. Let Mr. Corf build what he currently has the right to build. We hope he will do it with genuine community input and create something that truly enhances the village. But please deny the zoning changes, waivers, and special permits that would benefit him, but diminish the community. So, I would like to call on Ron Morey, who will discuss traffic.
For any speaker who comes up, just your name and address, please. And I am limiting the total commentary to 45 minutes. Go ahead. Good evening, Ms. Morey.
My name is Ron Morey, 35 Bradford Road, Newton, Massachusetts. Good evening, counselors and members of the planning board and everybody else present tonight. I have written comments that I will read in that are probably about 5 minutes long. Before I do that, I just wanted to react for a minute on what I think I've been seeing and hearing tonight, which is a very interesting charrette on how we can improve a lot of different things in Newtonville related to traffic. And I would observe that most of what's being proposed is independent of this project. So there are good things, and we like them, and they can happen, and they can happen whether this project happens at all, whether it happens with a zoning change, or whether it happens without a zoning change. That said, let me read a little bit here. We have a traffic study from the project team and a peer review authorized by the planning department. Both would have you believe this project will have minimal impact on traffic on the surrounding roadways, and that proposed improvements will mitigate any such impacts. That's the kind of wording you find in the report. I don't quote exactly, but that's what you'll see. We've heard the same story in tonight's testimony by the two consultants. I'm going to make one other aside. The consultants were generous enough to meet with me this afternoon and talk over a number of details about how the traffic studies were done and some of the issues related to them. And that was a very productive meeting, and my comments will partly reflect that. Moving on. It's also alleged that safety will be improved. How should all these conclusions be believed? Should you take a more skeptical view of the project's traffic and safety impacts? In my brief time tonight, I'll try to provide some details that should raise some concerns, and I'll later provide you with some more examples in a subsequent written submission. Before addressing these central questions, I'm going to take a moment to refresh you on how the professional transportation community evaluates and characterizes traffic. Highways and signalized intersections are rated for traffic congestion using a so-called level of service, or LOS, which is graded from A to F, where A is the best and corresponds to free flow of traffic at the speed limit, while F is the worst and is characterized by a breakdown in traffic flow, more demand than capacity, and a constant traffic jam. Again, this is language you find in professional documents. The 2000 Highway Capacity Manual gives the following explanations for level of service D, E, and F for signalized intersections, and I'm going to read a little bit of this to you because we're going to come back to the facts of what the situation is today and what it will be in the future. So level of D, level of service D, that is where the average vehicle is delayed from 35 to 55 seconds. So we're only halfway down to the work. This is significant congestion on critical approaches, but the intersection is functional. Cars are required to wait through more than one cycle during short peaks. No long-standing queues are formed. Not so bad. Level E, 55 to 80 seconds. Unstable flow, intolerable delay. Severe congestion with some long-standing queues on critical approaches. Blockage of intersection may occur if traffic signal does not provide for protected turning movement. Traffic queue may block nearby intersections upstream of critical approaches. Now let's get to the worst one, level F. Average delay greater than 80 seconds, total breakdown, a stop-and-go operation. Okay, with these level of service definitions in mind, let's consider a few traffic flow questions relative to this project. What is the current traffic situation? How badly is traffic congested? Let's focus on the main intersection, Washington at Walnut. Table 9 in the VHD tells us the overall condition is already E in the AM and F in the PM. It's as bad as it can be. When you break it down by various flows, east, west, north, south, through, right turns, and left turns, you find almost half, 21 out of 48, are already level of service F. Does this sound like an area where you should be looking to maximize development and added vehicle traffic? Not if you value the time and sanity of your existing residents. Will the project make traffic better or worse? Do you really believe adding a net of about 150 units and more commercial space will not add to the number of vehicle trips? The VHD
study provides an estimate of 89 additional trips in the a.m. rush hour, but two fewer trips in the evening rush hour. We're going to examine that in writing at a subsequent time. But obviously, the morning estimate seems more plausible, and this is to be built onto level E and level F existing. How will the added trips affect level of service? You will find the AM peak changes from level E to F the worst, and the PM peak remains at level F. Not a pretty picture. I'm going to end here because Fred wants to move on to other things, but there are a couple of little details that do not appear in the report that I'll just quickly tell you about. One is that in estimating traffic levels for the no-growth case in 2023, DHB has reduced the number of trips by 10%. They use 90% instead of 100% of what it is today. And they say, well, that's what you're allowed to do under the rules. Okay, but you're starting by making a very optimistic assumption, in my view. They've also done things to say, well, they show improvements and level of service improvement. Well, one of the things they're doing is they're dropping the exclusive pedestrian walk times at the intersections. That's not mentioned in the report, but that's what's going on. So now you've got more seconds for cars, but pedestrians are more at risk. So there are a lot of little things that we could talk about and that I will add to this testimony when I have the opportunity. Thank you for your attention and time tonight.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hi, Peter Bruce, Clapham Place. We're trying to get some slides going here.
This is not working.
As Councillor Danberger has pointed out, parking is the lifeblood of our business. I urge that we protect the health of our commerce by respecting Newton's well-defined ordinance for parking lots. It stipulates the size and number of spaces required for various uses, along with landscaping setbacks and other amenities. Developers always ask for and are usually granted waivers which permit them to avoid such obligations. But councillors should not waive our ordinance's requirements without good cause. After all, there's wisdom in those requirements, like the probability that most households will need two vehicles and that businesses will have the parking needs that vary with their size, structure, and product. Conversely, developers claim that residents and customers will frequently travel by foot, mass transit, or bicycle, even in cold weather. But those claims aren't realistic in Newtonville. The walkscore.com rates our village as the third least transit friendly in Newton. Also, our harsh winters, we're not in California after all, make it necessary often for people to take cars and trucks. It's also unrealistic to assume that people want more in parking and moving in smaller spaces than our zoning requires. In Newtonville's village center, see the slide, please. Needed parking is crucial to commerce, as noted by GPI. The brightly lined spaces, apart from the blue and orange ones, are where the metered parking is. To assess the health of a parking system and how much added stress it can absorb, let's look at typical busy times in our village. That is the 30 busiest hours during weekdays. The industry standard, and I repeat, industry standard for parking health is that a parking system not exceed 85% capacity. With that many vehicles, parking becomes over capacity, people start searching for parking, and often go elsewhere. Sometimes they don't come back. Based on GPI's research and my own, Newtonville's metered parking system has a functional capacity, that is the 85% rule, of 268 spaces. That's 85% of full capacity, which is 303 spaces. See the blue bar in the next slide, please? That's functional capacity right there, 268. The system can withstand 35 more vehicles during busy times, those 30 hours that I mentioned before, the busiest times of the weekdays, before becoming over capacity. If you go to the next slide, please. The busy times average, this is the average from my study and from GPI, from 2013 to 2015. As you can see, there's 53 more vehicles that our system can stand before becoming over capacity. Next slide, please. So we've got a reservoir of about 53 spaces. Now, the developers of Austin Street and Washington Place have requested waivers of information to not create 177 spaces. That means 177 more vehicles looking for parking, 3.5 times what our system could functionally accommodate. Contrast the orange bar, the big weighted bar, with the reservoir. It's 3.5 times bigger than that. Newton Center, with its 150 more parking waivers, already appears to have such a dysfunctional system, which frustrates many potential customers. Constraining the size of Washington Place within current zoning would mitigate this problem in Newtonville. And as for Washington Place's new parking demand, some experts have claimed that Washington Street needed parking demand to handle it, but that area is already 2/3 full in busy times. And parkers exiting and entering in rush hours will further congest traffic around the Washington Walnut Street intersection, which, as we've noted, has been graded E and D by impartial agencies. That's a little better than a lane parking lot. In summary, if we brush aside the practical wisdom in our zoning ordinance and the 85% rule, we'll choke our local commerce's blood flow and sentence many local businesses to death. This is the view of many of our business owners, as was well documented during the Austin Street debates. Please think anew about parking and constrain the size of Washington Place by maintaining current zoning. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please.
Kathleen Correll, 258 Mill Street, Newtonville. I've talked to Mr. Korf about trying to preserve and restore the buildings that he's purchased, but he's not willing or able to do that. So we accept that something is going to go there, and as Fred said, we would like that something to be within current zoning. On docket items 17916 and 18016, I ask you to vote against a special permit and against a zoning change that would enable an oversized five-story luxury apartment complex that would dwarf our village. Of the many reasons to oppose this project, I will focus on the negative fiscal impacts. The fiscal impacts of high-density residential development are profoundly negative. In Section 10, page 9 of the Newton Comprehensive Plan, it reads, quote, "In Newton, residential development pays less in taxes than it costs to service," unquote. The higher density the residential development, the more of a fiscal loss it represents. Upzoning and granting special permits for higher residential density is a fiscal losing proposition. Enabling special permits and spot rezoning to facilitate increased residential density privatizes profits for developers and externalizes costs to existing Newton taxpayers. In a city with more than $1 billion in unfunded liabilities and other debts, this is the height of folly. Spot upzoning and special permitting for greater density give the petitioner an undeserved windfall as his property instantly becomes more valuable. One might say, but the petitioner paid millions for these properties in expectation of getting a special permit and a zoning change. But that is a risk that he, as a property speculator, took. You are under no obligation to make that risk pay off for him. Your obligation is to the residents of Newtonville who face eviction, displacement, local business failures, higher housing prices, gentrification, and higher taxes if this project goes ahead at the proposed massive scale. Despite the mayor's rhetoric, as you know, most Newton residents reject increasing density, and the evidence shows that Newton does not have a housing shortage. There are vacancies at all large apartment buildings and hundreds of rental and sale listings available. The problem is not a lack of housing. It is that the housing is expensive and getting more expensive with each new construction project because new costs more than old. Housing markets are not as simple as build more housing and prices will come down. If that were true, Manhattan would be one of the most affordable places on earth. Adding density to desirable places does not make them more affordable. It just makes them more crowded. On page 16 of the mayor's recently released housing strategy, it says, quote, "The city will not build its way to affordability. The imbalance of demand and supply is so great, the city could not accommodate the development needed to affect pricing in a substantial manner," unquote. Moreover, you're not required to approve these petitions, in part because Newton has met its subsidized affordable housing requirements under state law. The city has invoked the 1.5% threshold consistently for more than a year and a half now. There is considerable support in Newton for preserving naturally affordable small houses and enabling small-scale affordable housing that fits into neighborhoods, but widespread opposition to massive luxury projects that masquerade as affordable housing. Enabling this project at this scale will lead to the eviction of renter families and households, including children and individuals who are members of protected classes under the Fair Housing Act, and lawsuits will likely follow. The city's legal liability to fair housing lawsuits is another potential fiscal impact. Another negative fiscal impact arises from a developer's ability to pass costs on to taxpayers. Our aging infrastructure, water, sewer, stormwater, these systems are strained by adding buildings and people. Many of your constituents cannot afford the rising water and sewer rates for maintaining and upgrading these systems. Another fiscal impact, more residents means hiring more first responders and city staff to provide services, and those additional hires make Newton's unfunded pension and benefits problem bigger. Despite the administration's attempts to confront Newton's $1.3 billion unfunded pension and benefits liability, the pension liability actually increased this past year. How will all this debt be paid down? The petitioner's fiscal analysis looked at the cost per service call, but not at the pension and retirement health care impacts. The most worrying fiscal impact of this proposal is school overcrowding and education costs. According to the Mass Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, Newton spends more than $18,000 per student in the Newton Public Schools, not the $14,000 in the petitioner's analysis. That does not include school building costs and other costs pushed to the city side of the budget. The petitioner has used the Newton School Department's projection methods to estimate that only 24 students will live in the 171 apartments proposed. Unfortunately, Newton School Department has a habit of underestimating how many students will live in high-density projects. When Arbor Point at Woodland, a development of a similar size with 180 rental units, was proposed, the school department projected it would yield 19 public school students. But it's not 19, it's 53. If 180 units at Arbor Point yield 53 students, how could 171 units yield only 24? And please don't count the units with few bedrooms, because there are entire families living in one-bedroom units at Arbor Point. The school department's projections are way off most of the time on these large developments. I'm going to close by saying there's a direct relationship between high-density housing and rising school enrollment, school overcrowding, and the need to build larger schools. Encouraging people to live in overpriced, stack-and-pack housing and seeing Newton's children, including newcomers and their teachers, forced to endure overcrowded conditions to fuel political ambition or developer profiteering is wrong. So if enabling this proposed high-density luxury apartment complex won't make housing more affordable and will impose tremendous costs on our indebted city, why would anyone approve it? You have a fiduciary responsibility to consider the fiscal impact. This project can go ahead, but in good conscience, I don't see how you can approve a special permit and spot up zoning, and I trust that you won't. Thank you.
Thank you. We will not have applause here. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Gerard Slattery, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and my family, Patrick Slattery, and we own 227 Walnut Street and 221 Walnut Street, and we're a direct abutter to this project. Also, I'm speaking as part of our own real estate company. We have over 40 years' experience in the city of Newton, and also as general contractors, also with more than 40 experience in Newton. The first thing I'd like to address is in terms of the driveway, or in terms of all of the access to the north side driveway, that two-lane road at the top of the proposed development on Walnut Street. There's been a lot of talk about how they're going to develop. The petitioner would like to make sure that his access to his property is not going to be blocked. I hope that the same courtesy is going to be extended to us and our driveway right next to his driveway at 227 Walnut Street, or else we're going to be perpetually blocked. And I'm hoping that I could have some way that, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask you to, how I could get that addressed.
I'm going to ask our planning department and the two people here, the peer reviewer and the project engineer for the developer, to be prepared to comment on that at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. And also just a general point, just from our own contracting experience in the area. As most of you know, this is this proposed development abuts the Newtonville historic area. Most of those houses and a lot of the other houses and commercial buildings even in Newtonville are all on fieldstone foundations. So the larger this project is, and I'd like to stress that most of us don't object to this site being developed. In fact, I encourage it. I'm delighted that it's going to be developed. It's just the size and scale and scope of the development is what really concerns most of us. So in terms of the size of a five-story building plus underground garage, that's going to take a lot of pile driving to do, and it's going to cause significant damage. We experienced it on our own property up in Newton Center by the Atrium Mall. We had ceilings come in. We had walls split. You could potentially even have foundation damage happen from that. So I'm very concerned about that. The biggest issue of all that we have is just the load, the load in terms of traffic and people and in terms of business that's going to be created here. Right now, one of the reasons of the death of kind of the current four block development is that they don't have enough parking. So what's going on right now is with all the waivers that the petitioner is asking for, right now the hose is at a dribble. So they're asking to have the hose go to full blast and also put their thumb on it. I mean, in terms of the pressure of how much Newtonville can handle. We've already expressed, we're basically at an F a lot of the time right now. How much worse than F do you want to go? And that adds to, you know, changing and adding the bike lanes. I think adding the bike lanes is fantastic, but I just haven't seen a good answer in terms of how the capacity, both of the size of how many units are going to be added, how much commercial is going to be added, and then the current traffic load that's already on Washington and Walnut Street, how that's all going to work, and then on top of which, with Austin Street and the other developments, it's just more than the area can handle. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please.
Lynn, I apologize. I'm going to keep you seated for time. So, Pamela Dodd.
Good evening. Could you state your name and address, please?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm trying to. My name is Pamela Dodd, and I live at 7 Briar Lane, and I want to talk about traffic. The developer would have us believe that a rationale for rezoning the Orbach for greater density and waiving parking requirements is that this is a transit-oriented project. But the oil project is not a transit-oriented project. The proposed rezoning would create a dense asylum of brick, glass, and cement placed in the oasis of a New England village. It would never be certified as a transit-oriented development. So let's go to the source. The Transit-Oriented Development Institute at the United States Department of Transportation identifies the transit-oriented concept as one that brings together compact, walkable communities with high-quality transportation systems in which people do not have to depend on a car for mobility. I think we all know that this does not describe Newtonville. The Institute emphasizes that the primary focus of transit-oriented development is transportation, not development. And this is a quote from the manual that says, "Getting the layout of the station right is one of the most important early moves that will lock in desirable or undesirable patterns. The Institute recommends a transit station location that is a safe, pleasant, lively environment with easy access and plenty of bike parking in multiple locations, and that provides safety of the young, the elderly, and the disabled. This does not describe Newtonville. We are not served by the regular Green Line. We have instead a commuter rail station. And before I tell you about the service at this station, let me show you the station itself." This is what the chairman was alluding to earlier. Those are the 36 steps from the platform up to the street. Pretty daunting. And next slide, please. This is an even more daunting to me picture of the stairs going down and a very long, narrow way that is our station. I don't know if you can even see the little shelter in the distance there. So this is what we have to work with. So the Institute identifies different types of transit locations, each with its own characteristics. Now, Newtonville fits in the category of a transit neighborhood, according to the manual. Transit neighborhoods are described as primarily residential areas that are served by commuter rail service or bus lines that connect at one location with a pickup frequency of 15 to 30 minutes. And they say secondary transit service is less frequent. That would be buses. And we've heard other talks, we've heard Bob Kavanaugh talk about the frustration of using the bus service, summarizing it by saying, "You can't get there from here," and that's true except for rush hour, and even that's complicated. But talking about the train service, except for rush hours, typically an hour plus. So I have a slide of the schedule, please. In fact, if you want to go downtown and miss the 126 inbound, you'll wait 6 hours until the next train comes through. And coming outbound, if you want to get from downtown to Newtonville, there's a 5-hour gap in the earlier part of the morning. Now, importantly, you see all those times in red there. And the times in red are times that the train doesn't stop at Newtonville. There has to be flagged down going inbound. And see the next slide, please. And that's pretty scary if you're standing on that narrow piece of land and a big train is coming through and you're trying to get the attention of a conductor. And going coming outbound, if you want to get from downtown to Newtonville, when you get off, you have to find a conductor to stop the train. And if you don't find a conductor, the next regular stop is in Wellesley Farm. So obviously, Newtonville does not fit largely in the train scheduling, the outer western suburbs that pay more fees. So in summary, Newtonville has an underperforming transit system, even for the category of transit neighborhood. But the category does best describe us of all the categories they have. And here's how the Institute describes the non-transit characteristics of this category. Density is low to moderate. Retail business primarily serves local customers. Commercial buildings are low rise, between 1 to 3 stories. Residential uses are small lot single family homes with 2 to 4 story apartments or condo buildings. Now, it may be a surprise to some to learn that Newtonville is already zoned, Business Use 1 and Business Use 2, to allow a project to meet exactly these standards. So we ask that you reject the developer's petition to rezone the land, and that instead you ask the petitioner to submit a new project proposal that's aligned with the vision of the city's comprehensive plan. Our comprehensive plan is defined by our current zone, which is appropriate to our situation and our transit capacities, and we urge you to approve it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please. Good evening, Mr. Harrington.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee, other members of the City Council, and the Planning Board, if you're meeting. And if you're not meeting, I'll say hello to you anyway.
They're not meeting, but the acknowledgement is quite appreciated.
I'm sorry? I can't hear you.
They're not technically meeting anymore because there's no longer a quorum, is my understanding.
All right. Can I have the first slide?
All right.
Most people make the single largest investment of their lives when they purchase a home. The neighborhood where the home is located is an important part of the selection process. Since it was established in Newton, zoning has been the key tool used in municipal planning and protection of the neighborhood. This is our Newtonville neighborhood, and we have the Business 1 and Business 2 zone surrounded by multi-residence 1 zone. One of the few places in the city, Newtonville, Nonantum, where you have two-family zones. This is one. Homeowners rely on the stability of the local zoning districts. The change in that stability is the principal reason neighbors come out to speak about special permits and proposed changes. The Newton Comprehensive Plan of 2007 recognizes the legitimacy of these concerns. It says the protection of property rights is an often expressed legitimate concern. That includes the right of homeowners to protect the financial investments and quality of life commitments they have made. The comprehensive plan also says, at the very least, new development should not damage the valued qualities that exist in the vicinity. With respect to docket items 179-16, the zoning petition, and 180-16, the special permit petition, the first question that comes to mind is why such a big building? It's like taking the hotel down in Newton Corner, knocking off the upper story, and dropping the building onto Washington Street in Newtonville. Could I have slide 2, please? All right, and there we have a 5-story proposed building. So let's review what can be built under existing zoning conditions and what we would be losing by refusing to create an MU4 zoning district. The site contains 74,000 square feet of land and is in two zoning districts, the U1 and 2. The owner can build 74,000 square feet of building space in one or two stories, as of right. The design of the building would dictate how many residential units and how much commercial space. With special permits, the owner could construct up to 130,000 square feet of building space. That itself is a pretty large project. This project proposes to build 171 units, 15% of which will qualify for the housing SHI, the state housing inventory. To maintain the status quo, we need to provide 17 units of low-income housing. The proposal is to give us 26 units. That's a net gain of 9 units, and that's to be applied to the 800-unit deficit that we have. The trade-off is to rezone the property and allow nearly 40,000 square feet of commercial space to compete with existing village business. Build 3 5-story buildings that take up 2 village blocks, all to gain 9 affordable SHI units. This does not look like a good deal to me, particularly when I am told that 22 units of naturally affordable housing will be demolished to make room for the project. And, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that before you finish, you would look into the impact of adding 38,750 square feet of new commercial space to Newtonville, the impact it will have on existing businesses in Newtonville and along Washington Street. What we're doing here is we're creating a new mall. Forget about the traffic. The commercial impact is, I believe, from my experience, is going to have a serious negative impact on existing local businesses. This proposal is not about housing. It's not about improving the business climate of Newtonville. This proposal is about land speculation and profit. Here's the next slide. With some innovation of design and a waiver of some of the requirements for commercial first floor commercial space, we could build a project that would meet existing zoning, 3 stories tall. It would be a very nice project on this 1.7-acre site. Here is an example of the village-friendly proposal for the 3-story building. And I would suggest to you that if we deny the zone change, the developer comes back with some project like this, the neighbors would support it, and it would be adequate and would blend in with what we do in the village. I've got a number of things here, Mr. Chairman. I've got some handouts. I've got planning board, and I only have copies for the members of the...
Why don't I do this, Mr. Harrington? I'll ask our clerk to get that to you, and rather than try to distribute everything this evening, we'll make sure it gets in all of our packets at the next...
That's for the land committee. That's for the planning board. Mr. Chairman, if I could just take a minute and beg your indulgence. You know, when you get to be my age and you sit around the house, someone usually comes up to you with a box of stuff and says, look at this stuff. You should throw it out. You look through it and see if there's anything you want. And that happened to me recently. And as I was looking through, I looked through and I found this package of zinnia seeds. Now, I looked at it, and it turns out that this is a campaign piece from Bob Gerst, who was former alderman from Newton Corner. And in it, he says, I've grown flowers for years in my garden in Newton. They're strong, reliable, and giving. They symbolize what I stand for, the schoolyards, the neighborhoods, and the villages of Newton. I ask you, are there any here who will stand up for the villages and the neighborhoods of Newton? And if you will you please vote against the zoning of this to an MU4 and leave it zoned as it is, and we can work out a new deal with the developer. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. How many more speakers do you have?
Mr. Chairman, we're all done.
Great. Okay. Well, it is a few minutes before 10. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak this evening who has not spoken yet? All right, seeing none, we are going to adjourn this meeting. Let me just take a moment to go over what we're going to do next. We obviously have had a lot of questions from councilors. We've had a lot of public comment. There's a great deal of work, I think, for our staff and for the developer and for the peer reviewer to be doing. We are going to reconvene our meetings regarding the OR building in September. I'm not sure if we're going to do it September 13th. Or not, that's our first meeting in September. If we don't do it then, we'll certainly try to do it towards the end of the month. We have to deal with other scheduling, Jewish holidays, and so forth. And I will have a better idea in the next few weeks as to what the next upcoming items on the agenda are as we take this up going forward. If you have any questions or comments, you're more than welcome to submit them to our committee clerk. He makes sure that everything gets distributed to all of us. And, of course, you're welcome to communicate with any of us individually by email or phone call at any time. But I would urge that if you're going to submit anything in writing, really best to do it to our committee clerks so we all have the benefit of seeing what the communications are. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.